Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike 2099, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slaggy McWaggy 2. Yes, indeed. Today is October 26th, 2025, and this is the Game Buoy Podcast, episode 185, The Unforgiven 2, taking a look at some recent horrific releases in another installment of the Game Buoy Remake Project, this being part 13 in the intermittently ongoing series, as we use retrospective perspectives to reflect on some major horror releases from the last 12 years or so, that we might recommend for you to settle in with this frightful All Hallows. That number might not make sense to you today, but don't worry about it. It's not important. With all that having been said, welcome once again, each and every one of our lovely and beautiful listener, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
Today, as mentioned, we're going to be talking about some of the major horror games that released while we weren't in production. Dead by Daylight had already been a minor cult hit when we were broadcasting in the old days, but it ended up going on to define an entire sub-genre of asymmetric horror experiences, and, you know, it's still quite healthily thriving even today. Likewise, Silent Hill has come back with both successful remakes and now new releases. So for a genre near and dear to our hearts, it's actually been really lovely to think back and reflect upon multiple success stories within this particular space. Additionally, this week, we would like to take off our hats and dedicate our episode to the memory of Tomonobu Itagaki-san. He passed away last week. Itagaki contributed tremendously to the industry, particularly within the spaces that our show is focused on. We've talked about Itagaki a lot over the years. Obviously, he was a controversial figure for a lot of reasons. We don't condone or co-sign all of every actions of his entire career or whatever, but about whom do we? Truly and sincerely, our hearts and thoughts go out to his loved ones in this difficult time, and we are also hanging our heads in this time and mourning. Do you have anything to add there, Saggy?
No, I think you said it well.
Brilliant. Well, then with all of that in mind, that's sort of what we've got on deck here today. Let's start getting things going a little bit better, start getting the energy moving in a little bit more of a positive direction, relax and talk about some games news. Slaggy, what is the way that we rhyme?
Charmeleon, Wartortle, Mewtwo, Tentacruel, Aerodactyl.
I'm a knight, slow bro. But that's all, folks.
That's all, folks. Yeah, so the reason why I threw a little of the classic Poké rap in there is that, if you hadn't heard, there was a huge Pokémon leak. Apparently, if this is to be believed, and, you know, the sources are pretty reliable, we have a glimpse of what the next 5 years of Pokémon will be bringing us. Coming first in 2026... apparently, Gen 10 will be releasing with Pokemon Wind and Pokemon Waves. It is going to have a region inspired by Southeast Asia, with some underwater regions and possibly procedurally generated islands. For those who are... yeah, indeed. For those who are a fan of the Pokemon Legends series, which I would say we here on Game Buoy largely are for the most part, there will be a new Legends game set in Galar 1,000 years prior to the events of Pokemon Sword and Pokemon Shield, involving creating the first Gigantamax Pokeball. Some similarities in Spectox or what have you were comparing the game to Xenoblade Chronicles X. Possibly coming in 2027, it seems like the Legends games are kind of now set for an every other year cadence of release. The article on Kotaku did not mention a release year, but 2027 would be a safe bet because in 2028, Project Seed, which apparently is a Pokemon MMO of some sort involving multiple regions, most likely Hoenn and Sinnoh, but possibly Kanto and Johto as well. There's not much known beyond that, but oh my god, I think people have been waiting a very long time for a true sort of Pokemon MMO experience, at least I have. And then the last piece of news from the leak, well, not quite the last piece of news, but the last sort of release, can't even say release update, but release forecast, is that Gen 11 would be coming out in 2030, so... You know, yeah. Possibly another Legends game in there, hopefully, maybe in 2029. So, maybe. Oh boy.
You know, so this is really interesting. And I want to apologize to any listeners whom view talking about these kinds of leaks as, you know, spoilers effectively, or maybe didn't want to hear some of this information. First off, this is as absolutely bare bones as it gets in terms of the actual data, so that we can laying it out so that we can kind of talk about it. The thing is, for me, at least, the current Pokemon game that released this past week is one of the major news focuses of the industry this week. And it's really hard for me to talk about some of my thoughts about the current game without talking about how I see it fitting into the larger production schedule of what the Pokemon company is doing with the brand, right? Because I actually think that if they could have given the current game a little more time in the oven, might have been a better... might have led to an even better product. But clearly, when they're booked and signed to deliver, you know, four more games over the next 4 years, it's very difficult to imagine that, you know, they really have the resources, including just straight up time, to put games back in the oven, even when that's what, you know, they really kind of need. That having been said, individually, every single one of these games sounds exactly like what I would like to play and what I would like to see sort of the first next gen iterations of each of these subseries looking like, right? So I honestly, I'm really excited for potentially all four of these games that we're ostensibly sort of looking at here. A new game in the Galar region in particular is something I really wanted. I felt like the current Legends game actually had quite a few references to Galar. So hearing that they are sort of prepping for a return is not really a surprise, right? But it is something I'm anticipating. And before we talk about this next set of bullet points, what were your thoughts on these projects?
Yeah, I mean, Wind and Waves, of course, is going to be really interesting to see if that actually pans out. Like, I couldn't see the entire world map being procedurally generated, but maybe, like, a little side set of things, like exploration, like, almost like a safari zone, honestly, with, like, randomly generated. Yeah.
I was thinking about, like, what if it was a wild zone, and it was a procedurally generated, semi-randomized wild zone, and then so, right. If you got a good seed, you could invite your friends there, you know, maybe everyone has their own procedurally generated island, and you can invite people there. I could think of so many different ways this could be implemented in an additive way, and that this could be really cool and interesting, right?
Yeah, I couldn't see like the main story areas being procedurally generated, but I never thought of it being like a seed, like you said, not Project Seed, but more like a Minecraft, like, oh, this is a really cool layout for my Minecraft island or whatever, and you know, I'm gonna invite my friends. I had, when I heard procedurally generated, I thought that like, oh, each time you go island exploration, you can get a brand new island with a random Pokemon on it. So,
that's two different approaches to the same basic concept right there. That actually exactly shows you why you can't draw too much from this very limited data set, right? Because you and I just took the same bullet point and went in two wildly different directions with it.
And it all could just be a load of Garbodor. So,
it could.
You never know.
To that end, I do want to note with the regard to Project Seed, I'm wondering if we're not going to see that continue some of the gameplay ideas that we saw specifically in Legends Zeta A.
Right.
While I was playing it, there were quite a few times that I found myself thinking that you could basically just make this an online game as is, with as far as like the how the cooldown timers and stuff work, and it would be a very similar experience to some of the other recent action MMOs we've played. Blue Protocol most immediately coming to mind, right?
Yeah.
So I could very easily see them adapting that game system specifically to an MMO project, which again just leaves me really sort of champing at the bit for more information about the supposed new Legends game. And obviously we won't have any news on it for a long time. So in that regard, what a curse.
Right. Well, it seems like at the Pokemon Company, they are booked and blessed, but their budgets are apparently not as huge as you would expect for like one of the premier franchises in the gaming industry. I say premier, I mean, maybe we're a little biased as Pokemon fans, but you know, the strongest selling series for sure. As part of these leaks, we also got information, and we've got all our articles about this are from Kotaku, which is a great summation of the various information coming out. You can find that on GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org.
So there was some budget information about some of the current games, and then apparently the budget for Wind and Waves, which will be about 3 billion yen. And I mean, if it's coming out next year, you know, then they probably know how much has been budgeted, you know, if this is really true. That, you know, exchange
and
rates
it's
are
worth
funny.
Noting, yeah. We keep saying if this is true, by all accounts, this does seem to be a reliable leak. However, it is worth noting, little bit of an asterisk, technically speaking, everything is in flux. All of these details could be subject to change. We just have every reason to believe that at this time the data is accurate.
Right. So a 3 billion yen budget for Wind and Waves, you know, exchange rates are funny, but it's about $20 million, which sounds like a lot, but I mean, when you consider some AAA games are like multi-millions, like hundreds of millions of dollars, like that's a tight budget for such a, you know, pillar of Nintendo's franchises.
A lot of us feel, and even keeping in mind that some of the overseas development costs are going to be a little lower because salaries are lower than they might be here domestically. But relative to the amount of money that these games make, you know, they're literally one of the top grossing IPs in the game space. So for it to have such a disproportionately smaller budget is sort of sticking out to a lot of folks, even keeping in mind with, like I said, the reduced price of development in other regions.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm sure we could talk a lot more about how some of these budgets might have impacted some past games, for better or worse. That being said, there was some other information that was interesting. There's some information about that a Black-White remake is something that they would like to do, but not in the near future because they really want it to be a full remake and, you know, really do it justice, I guess. And another piece, a little tidbit, is that apparently Junichi Masuda-san was kind of banned from being in charge of development for a while because he had kind of just dominated. And I guess the Game Freak became a bit of a control freak. And so and that's kind of just an interesting insight to the operations behind the scenes. So, ooh. And that all this having been said, hopefully we don't get hit with a DMCA takedown because the Pokemon Company is hitting prominent leakers with DMCA takedowns. I am assuming this means the ones who are actually doing the leakers.
Yeah, that as well as you know, quite a few assets, screenshots, quite a few slides from various like PowerPoint presentations and clipboards were leaked. So we have in a couple of cases like mock-up screenshots of some of these games even. And it a lot of the sites that were posting that, accounts posting that to their social medias, I did see a lot of those specific posts getting taken down across multiple different services.
Yeah. So if this section is just mysteriously missing from the episode at some
missing
point,
number.
Woo! Yeah, and also I've been calling it Wind and Waves. Apparently it's Wind and Wave. So maybe it's Wind and Wave. You never know.
Every wave is a winding road.
As far as these DMCA takedowns, I mean, obviously copyright, but it would just be nice if they also, you know, when it's being used in politically charged videos, maybe they could also do a DMCA takedown on that too. Thanks.
Right. You're not wrong.
And all that having been done, all that having been said, we have word courtesy of Gematsu, who, you know, we refer to their work all the damn time on this show. Apparently, Legend ZA has sold 5.8 million units in its first week. So,
wow.
You know, it may not be a perfect game by any means, but it sure seems to be selling like hotcakes.
Well, and you know, that's another thing, right? I don't think it's a perfect game. I don't even think it's my favorite of the Switch era Pokemon games, but it's still a game I enjoyed. Like, I don't regret buying it. I don't regret having the experience. It's not even my favorite Legends Pokemon game. But
yeah.
I am happy to see this success. I do think it's a good thing. I don't think the developers behind it are lazy and don't deserve the sales, and that, oh, people shouldn't be buying games that aren't perfect, or, you know, the most incredible step up from the last version. Like, no, these are people working on a deadline who had new ideas and implemented enough of them that for me, it's still a fun time.
Yeah.
It's not perfect. That's okay. I think it's important that we talk about ways that it can be made better. And hopefully in the future, the games will be even better than they are now. But I don't know. I don't think it's that crazy to have enjoyed a game that was subpar in some ways. Just because it wasn't my favorite Pokemon game or even my favorite Pokemon Legends game doesn't mean I didn't still have a really great time with it.
Absolutely. And sounds like 5.8 million minus one people might agree with you.
Ah!
To some degree, yeah. I mean, but that just goes to show, you know, like, I don't know all of how the finances work, but I mean, if you figure they even made like $4 a profit per game sold, I mean, that's their, you know, basically their budget recouped there. So
yeah, no, it's, these games are very profitable. That's kind of the whole point, right?
Indeed. And something else that might be profitable and is quite surprising.
Well, yeah, this was a major news story. This just hit on Friday. This is the announcement of a full remake of Halo Combat Evolved. This is Halo Campaign Evolved.
That's
it is
cute.
Going to be published by Xbox Game Studios, developed by Halo Studios, and it's coming to Xbox Series, PC, and PlayStation 5? In 2026. Obviously, this is major news, as is the fact that they are going full Unreal for this release. Seen a lot of people really excited about the prospect of playing Halo on the PlayStation platform. While I think I'm probably still keeping Microsoft at a little bit of an arm's distance myself, I really have to ask, what were your thoughts here? Because my mind was a little bit blown seeing this trailer.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a lot of people like, what? But then I'm like, back in my day, we thought that Sonic would never appear on a Nintendo console. And like,
right?
When you think about it, Sonic's been releasing, Sonic games have been releasing on Nintendo consoles at this point for longer than they hadn't.
Because that's how the passage time of time works. Is a weird thing, yeah.
Right, right. So, I mean, it is surprising because, I mean, Halo is kind of one of those Xbox, you know, core franchises.
It's kind of the Xbox core franchise, right?
I mean, I would say Viva Pinata, but...
you and maybe a dozen other people?
Justice for Viva Pinata, but in all seriousness, like, yeah, I mean, this is quite a change, and it did seem like that they are intending on Halo games being available on PlayStation moving forward, like that Halo is just going to be a multi-platform franchise. I mean, you know, we saw a little bit of this with Minecraft, but I mean, I feel like that was kind of different because, you know, Minecraft was originally independent and, you know, then it got bought out by Microsoft, and it just makes sense to not limit Microsoft. But I guess the same thing here, and you know, just kind of makes the more interesting thing to me here is not that Halo specifically, but just the fact that if Halo is, you know, not if, the fact that Halo is coming to PS5, I mean, I'm expecting we're just going to see Microsoft console exclusives maybe not be as much of a thing.
Yeah. For me, I think the writing has been on the wall very clearly since we started seeing other major projects like, I think we talked about this here on the show a little bit, even in the limited degree to which we've been talking about Microsoft. I think we've talked about the rumors of and then release of, you know, Gears of War remastered. There was the Indiana Jones game that got ported to PS5. So I really, all of the major Microsoft games have been getting ported. I had been kind of viewing Halo as the last holdout, if anything. And it is a holdout no longer. Like you say, I think with this, truly everything is game to come across to multi-platform now. And in fact, to that end, maybe we will end up seeing Viva Pinata on Switch someday.
I feel like Switch would be a great platform for Viva Pinata, honestly.
That's honestly, the whole Rare Replay package being ported to Switch would, I think, move a reasonable amount of numbers. Enough units to make it worth doing, let me put it that way.
Indeed. And, you know, all this kind of really leads one to wonder, what is the future of the Xbox brand? Well, someone kind of asked that to Xbox President Sarah Bond, you know, covering the release of the ROG Xbox Ally X, specifically asking if the next Xbox is going to be a gaming PC hybrid console. And President Sarah Bond responded that the next Xbox will be a premium experience, not outright confirming, but, you know, this kind of suggesting that just as many think it will be, is that it's going to be more like a gaming PC than not. I've seen a lot of people talking about this, especially because we'll actually get to this a little bit later in our Rumor Has It, but, you know, the price tag that could come with a premium experience might seem exorbitant, but I've seen kind of some discussion about, like, you know, still, if it had kind of the power of a, you know, pretty decent gaming PC, but was, you know, expensive for a console, but not that bad for a gaming PC, it could drive down gaming PC prices, which would hopefully be a net positive for PC gamers, you know, and kind of control the price gouging that maybe some companies do for the ultimate gaming power on PC.
Well, so, and I kind of view it with that, and in addition, maybe this is Microsoft saying that via whatever hardware partner they're going to work with, effectively, you know, the next Xbox is effectively a fancy PC that is, you know, equipped to play Xbox games out of the box. I actually also do think there is a market for reliable pre-built PCs. These end up just being pre-built PCs that also happen to be very reliable. I mean, obviously that's a tall order coming out of Microsoft hardware, but we're supposing, for the sake, rhetorical sake of argument, if we imagine a high-end PC that has good enough build quality that people feel comfortable buying these pre-builds, I do think that's something there's a market for. I don't know that I'm necessarily a part of that market, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. I actually do know quite a few people who, even people who build their own PCs, but would rather buy a pre-built if they could find a pre-built that they really trusted, you know? So I do think there's a market for what she's talking about, even if I don't necessarily believe Microsoft in 2025 is going to execute correctly.
Right. And I mean, I still think the door is open for more third-party Xboxes as well. I mean, we have the ROG Ally X, or Xbox Ally X. So, you know, I'm very interested, not in a, ooh, cool, I want all the Xboxes, but just as a follower of the industry and someone who covers the news, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. So,
indeed. We also are going to talk a little bit about a new report that has come out of Bloomberg. We're going to report on it via Eurogamer's coverage, which we will, of course, link you to over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Basically, this report suggests that the Xbox gaming division has been asked to operate with a 30% profit margin. This is a vastly above average margin across the industry. You know, typically you're really looking for like half that. that. And in fact, the highest profit, average profit margins were peaking at like 22% in the last 5 years and going down from there to apparently 17.1% in 2024 per Bloomberg's research. So the fact that they were looking for this 30% specifically in at least 2023, but it sort of led to believe that this is still ongoing. Frankly, this explains a lot about what's going on with Microsoft. It's kind of like we've talked about with various publishers in the past about how they're making money. They are in the black. They're doing profit, but under the auspices of late stage capitalism, a profit, a little bit of profit, that's not enough. It has to be all of the profit or nothing. And so now we're seeing them doing all of these big market pivots to try and presumably increase valuation or try to reallocate resources to other departments like their AI stuff.
Yeah.
Hard to imagine that bet paying off better, but I guess we're all going to be in for a little bit of a ride while Microsoft figures out what the hell's going on behind the scenes. This is maybe a little bit of a rumor because we are talking about unverified reports. But again, this lines up so closely with a lot of the questions we've had about Xbox over the last few months to years that it seemed really obvious to include in our discussion on some of this Microsoft stuff here.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we see Bloomberg and it's like, oh yeah, but Jason Schreier is over there now and doing some pretty good work with Bloomberg, I would say. So I would Absolutely. Say that, you know, that is a trusted name. And, you know, I'm glad you mentioned the AI. Actually, I'm not glad you mentioned AI, but I mean, I am glad that you made reference to that because, you know, with all I'm sure that Microsoft's investment in AI is going to pay off, they maybe could bring on HyperWrite as a Microsoft studio. HyperWrite, if you had not heard of them, as I had not, they are an AI startup based out of Long Island. And the CEO, Matt Schumann, released a tease for an upcoming project that is meant to be like an on-rails Tom Clancy style FPS, but it's just horrible AI slop. And if you want to torture your eyeballs, you could go to the Kotaku article that's linked over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And, you know, if you want to subject yourself to that, but, you know, it's I can't really say anything about it. It's horrible AI slop, and I just can't. No, thank you, ma'am.
I will say, I thought it was fucking funny.
Oh, it's hella funny in the train wreck slop way, but...
Right? Like, it doesn't look like a fun thing to play, but it's wild the way that, obviously, because it's not actually thinking, every scene sort of bleeds into one another without any type of segue. So you go from, like, I'm on a train platform to I'm in the train to suddenly I'm on another train platform. It's really hilarious. And like, if I saw this in a real game I was playing, I would turn it off. It's so sloppy. It's wild.
Yeah. But as a observer from outside, it's similar to those, it's similar to those AI images where someone has like seven fingers. And I mean, if someone actually has seven fingers, cause that's how they're born. Like, I'm not judging, but like, you know, the AI like messiness.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's good for a laugh. It is not something I would encourage anyone to take seriously.
But cool. I guess this is where we're heading in the gaming industry.
Cool.
Cool. Well,
something that is actually a little bit cool, at least, is word here out of Bloomberg, once again, this article by Takashi Mochizuki, and this is word that Nintendo is aiming to produce 25 million Switch 2 units by the end of March.
Wow.
Yeah. That's wild. Right this moment, Nintendo's analyst sales estimate is that they are going to reach 17.6 million within the fiscal year ending in March. But by all accounts, Bloomberg has been tipped that Nintendo has a much more ambitious private plan and are really seeking to exceed any kind of expectation any of us had regarding Switch availability going into this first year period. Psyche, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I also just wanted to shout out to Debbie Wu, who co-wrote that. And for the other Bloomberg, although we didn't directly link to them, the one with Jason Schreier was co-written with Dina Bass. So great job to Bloombergers. Ooh, Bloombergers, yummy. Yeah, no, this is that's a lot of Switch 2s, but you know, we were kind of like, how are they going to put out the number of Switch 2s that they said they were going to? And they put out a lot of Switch 2s for launch. Well, and I mean, so,
as
you know,
noted at Bloomberg, you know, the PlayStation 5 back at its launch had been believed to have been kind of undercut by its own limited availability. So Nintendo getting on top of that really does appear that they have been paying attention to what Sony and Microsoft are doing, just maybe not in the ways that we traditionally think of it, right?
Yeah. Good for Nintendo. You go, Nintendo.
Indeed. And then wrapping this up and transitioning us into our release updates, we have word here of the last two playable characters in the upcoming Marvel Cosmic Invasion, as well as its release date. This is, of course, the upcoming side-scrolling 2D beat-em-up. This is being developed by Dotemu and Tribute Games. It will
Wait,
be
it's really Dotemu? I thought it was Dotemu.
I'm pretty sure it's Dotemu.
Ah, I was like, oh, Dotemu. It must be a Japanese company.
Oh, I thought it was Dotemu, like Dot Emulation. They've had that name for so long.
Yeah, they're French. I don't know why I always think of them as Dotemu.
This game is going to be releasing on the PlayStation 5, Xbox Series, Switch 2, PS4, Xbox One, and PC on December 1st. I think that's really exciting. I'm really, really, really looking forward to this game. That's obviously an indication I'll be picking it up. What about you, Slaggy? Are you planning to look into this one?
Yeah, I know you're going to choose Beta Ray Bill, so I guess I'll have to settle for Phoenix. I say settle for Phoenix.
Bitch. That's funny. All right. Well, with all of that having been done and said, let us do our release updates real quick before we move on to the club. First and foremost, we have the announcement that the Switch 2 and Switch versions of Dragon Ball Sparking Zero will be launching on November 14th. I think that's a little sooner than most of us were expecting, so that's exciting. They also announced that there will be some motion control options added for this version of the game. Please look forward to it.
Nice.
We also got the announcement of Luigi's Mansion coming to the Nintendo Switch Online Classics Library just in time for Halloween on October 30th. Ooh. I will note this was announced more than a week in advance, which is a little bit of a weirdly early announcement for an NSO game. Does make me wonder if Nintendo has any other Halloween announcements coming up.
Yeah, I can't believe we did not talk about that last episode. Luigi's Mansion's a great fall season game.
Yeah, it really is. Let's see, we also have here Ball Cross Pit. This is going to be releasing on Switch 2 this October 28th. This is a noteworthy one because this is a game I've been playing a lot of on the PC platform this week. I'll talk about it a little bit more later, but it's basically Vampire Survivors in a Breakout / Arkanoid clone, so it's good freaking times. The side-scrolling retro slasher Terrifier, the arcade game, will be launching on November 21st. The SCP spinoff game Go Home Annie will be coming to PS5 and Xbox in early 2026 alongside a new free update for the PC version. We also have word here of the Burning Springs update coming to Fallout 76 on December 2nd, with PS5 and Xbox Series versions set to come early next year. We've also got word that System Shock Remake will be getting releases on the Switch 2 and Switch platforms later this year. Fallout 4 Anniversary Edition is getting a Switch 2 release in 2026. As had been previously rumored, Assassin's Creed Shadows is coming to the Switch 2 platform and on December 2nd. In addition to that announcement, they released a fall roadmap of their upcoming updates. Whew, that was a little bit of a tongue twister.
Oh boy.
As seemingly the direct result of its observed performance woes In public demonstration, it would seem that the Elden Ring Tarnished Edition for Switch 2 has been delayed to 2026. We have a new update set for the Pokemon Trading Card Game Pocket. This is the expansion Mega Rising. It will be launching October 30th, and as you likely guessed from its name, it will be bringing Mega Evolutions to the Pokemon Trading Card Game Pocket experience. And last but certainly not least, the long-delayed Sonic Rumble is set to finally launch November 5th. That is, of course, barring any new additional last-minute delays. Slaggy, do you have anything for us, or do you want to get out of here?
Let's go to the Culture Club. All right, this is a little different piece of, I can't even really say it's news. It's more of a, what do you call those?
You've been over this. Fuck you, it's culture.
No, I mean, like, you know, like an interest piece. Is that what they call it in journalism or whatever? Like,
no, I think that's an adequate description. Yeah.
Yeah. So this, I'm just going to give the headline for this. And it is Pokemon Legends ZA finally allows cross-dressing. And there's a reason players are using it. So this is talking about how the fashion choices in Pokemon Legends ZA allow for, you know, a wider range of gender expression, which might have been unintentional, but maybe not. And I just think it's, you know, a really cool read. This is Kenneth Shepherd did this over at Kotaku. We're a fan of Kenneth's work. And I recommend you go check it out. But the reason that this tickled me so to see an article like this is that as I had been playing ZA over the, you know, past 2 weeks and sharing my Poke adventures with Captain Spike, I had been talking about, like, oh my god, look at this fashion serve my trainer's giving. Like, oh, check out this they-them energy. Yes. So, like, to see that other people are really kind of, like, gravitating towards that, you know, freedom of gender expression, I just think that's really cool. And I, you know, I don't know how intentional it was, but I mean, the fact that the outfits aren't gender locked.
Well, I was going to say the fact that the outfits aren't gender locked and that your body shape is sort of tied instead to the specific outfits you're wearing so that everyone can sort of look good in any outfit. To me, it seems very intentional to just go effectively gender agnostic. Which, frankly, I think is for the best. Let everybody use their own pronouns as they would like and just let them dress as they would like to dress. Clothes ain't gotta have a gender.
Yeah, and I mean, I know sometimes, at least from what I've gathered, it's easy to think of Japan as socially conservative. And I mean, I'm sure there are ways in which it still is in many ways. But I mean, also look at the United States if you want to talk about socially conservative. Am I right?
Right. But I mean, that's the thing, especially for us as we get older. I really have to remind myself, like, that might have been a true thing when I was taught it. But what do things look like today?
I mean, I think about Final Fantasy 14 and the fact that a lot of their so-called gendered outfits are no longer gender locked. I mean, there are still a few, but like, you know, there's a lot more freedom there for, you know, having a cute cat boy in a maid outfit, because why wouldn't you do that? So you could have a Pokemon trainer in a maid outfit, because I'm pretty sure they're kind of like maid outfits, if I recall correctly.
I'll also note within the larger context of what we're saying, like, we are talking about these very specific nerd niches. But I will say, at least, you know, we often talk about current events around the world. And so when I see things in Japan also about, you know, oh, this court is now recognizing same-sex marriages, or, you know, that region is now accepting, you know, the X gender marker. I actually do think there are a lot of contexts in which the old, oh, Japan is super conservative perspective is just not as accurate as a lot of Americans still think it is. And again, I'm obviously super layman on this. I'm not like the most educated in the world. It's just a more nuanced situation on the face of it already. And I really wanted to note it. But I look at stuff like this, which it doesn't really surprise me that this is happening. I'm just so delighted by it.
Yeah. Another little cultural piece about Pokemon Legends ZA is that a lot of people, including Kotaku, are talking about kind of the visual comparisons between the Switch and Switch 2 release. So the Switch release is capped at 1080p, and in handheld mode has a lower end of 800p. On Switch 2, it displays up to 2160p, which that's 4K, right? And in handheld, 1080p. And so, like, it does seem like both within this article and, you know, just kind of the general pulse of discussion that the article is referring to, kind of saying, you know, is that enough for a $10 upgrade? To be a little bit glass half full instead of glass half empty, not judging anyone for having their opinions, but the fact that Pokemon Legends EA is a Pokemon game on a Nintendo console that can run at 4K 60 frames per second, that's nothing to scoff at, right? And also the fact that, you know, I can understand that if, you know, maybe this should have been a free upgrade or whatever, but the fact that, you know, unlike poor Scarlet and Violet, that this game, by all accounts, runs pretty well on the Switch 1 and, you know, visually looks pretty good. But that being said, even looking at the screenshots on Kotaku, like, the Switch 1 doesn't look bad, but I can definitely see, like, a much crisper image, as you would expect, on the Switch 2 1 and, like, you know, better anti-aliasing and better shadows and stuff. So, like, you know, I think for me, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts, but, like, I think that it's less about, oh, you know, it's not much of a next-gen leap, rather than it seems like that on Switch, it appears like it was pretty well optimized.
Yeah. I have to be honest, in a lot of ways, I feel like the footage of this in particular is like, oh, this is kind of the performance profile that people were expecting Scarlet Violet to have, right? Back in the day. In fact, I think this is honestly a really good thing. Generation turnovers are always kind of weird, but I don't want last generation players to be left behind. I don't want them having like a markedly worse experience. I just sort of view this as a uniformly good thing that they got their engine together enough to perform this way on the original Switch hardware. I think that that portends a lot of really good things for their engine and for the effort they're putting into these games and the areas that they're going to focus on in the future. I don't think it's a controversial statement to say that I don't think they were focused on technical performance previously, and I think they are a little bit more now, and I think that's a very good sign. That's what I take from this. As far as the upgrade thing, I utilized the Nintendo voucher system to get the digital version of the game at a $10 reduced price point. So then I used that $10 to get the Switch 2 upgrade.
Yeah.
So I understand the idea that this should have been a free upgrade. Obviously, I didn't exactly get it free, even though it kind of feels like I did. It probably should have been a free upgrade. It doesn't, based on what I'm seeing, make me feel particularly good that I paid for it. But the fact that for me, again, it feels like I didn't pay for it, again, brings me back to not really feeling that strongly about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, for people who didn't do that, I understand why they have their feelings, though. If I were in their shoes, I might well feel
good. Yeah, and a lot of people in the comments are like, actually, I think this is not a bad thing. And, you know, the other thing I just want to end on with this story.
Well, and that is an interesting angle, because I scrolled down to the comments, and I'm sorry, I do want to hear what you're saying, but I just want to note, someone here is saying if they could pay $10 to get a 60 frames upgrade patch for some of their favorite last gen games, and then they cite a few of them, including Bloodborne, and they're like, I would absolutely have paid for that upgrade. And frankly, I get it. For a lot of these older games that never did get performance patches, if the difference was a $10 download price would have made that patch exist, a lot of gamers would have liked to have opted in on that. And I actually do think that's an interesting angle, because when I think about it, there are games that I would have liked upgrade patches for that never came. Kingdom Hearts 3 is one for me that I would love to have seen Kingdom Hearts 3 get a upgrade patch so it could really take advantage of PS5 and Xbox Series hardware upgrades. So I actually do kind of get it. And when I think about it from that perspective, it also doesn't feel quite as egregious, even though in most of these cases, we're talking about instances where they'd have to go back and work on something that they had already signed off on. And this was a current gen game that still did it while it was still current. Right, but I do think the I think the sentiment holds. I think it's a framework that is worth thinking through. And like I said, if I had paid for the Pokemon upgrade, maybe I'd have raw feelings about it. But since I didn't, I kind of don't.
Yeah. The one thing I wanted to say is that maybe, I mean, because it's been a while, obviously, but I don't remember a lot of discourse about the Wii U version of Breath of the Wild, because remember, Breath of the Wild came out on Wii U. It was the final Wii U game, and I just feel like, you know, because people have a lot of feelings about Pokemon, I feel like a lot of times Pokemon maybe gets a little bit more harshly criticized than other franchises might.
Yeah, I do think that is happening to a certain degree.
And I mean, GameCube for Twilight Princess too, right? Like, I feel like this isn't the only time that this has happened.
Yeah, indeed.
Anyway, all what right. You got next for us?
We also have word here of another Pokemon news story, but this is fortunately just a short little piece of news about a new Pokemon anime short. This is the newest entry in the Poketoon series of shorts, which has been going on YouTube since 2020. I believe this is the 18th iteration. This is Ashita mo Sirenite to, tomorrow with Gardevoir 2. It's already on YouTube. If you'd like to watch it now, you can go load it up. This was directed by Yoshihide Ibata-san at 100 Studio. And if you like Gardevoir like I do, it is a good time.
Yeah, was that one Scrafty cartoon that was very much like a Tom and Jerry inspired one? Was that part of the Poketoons as well?
I think that was the first Poketoon short.
That's what I
but
thought.
I would
yeah.
have to check.
Honestly, I forgot about the Poketoons. Like, I have 17 videos to catch up on now.
Well, we also, and this is really more of just a reminder, since most of us lived through this and have our own memories of it, but this past week, there was a outage at one of the Amazon AWS server farms, and basically every major game online in the world had a certain amount of negative experience as a result, like Fortnite, Roblox, Pal World, Clash Royale, a bunch of Nintendo services were all just straight up offline for a while. For me, the main takeaway here, though, and the main reason why I wanted to mention it, again, it's news, but it was a current event most of us lived through and has already passed. But I just really want to take this to underline, for me, I feel like this is kind of a powerful reminder of why we should all be opposed to corporate monopolies. The idea that Amazon's AWS infrastructure is basically the backbone of half of the internet is probably not a good thing. And I think that's something that's worth thinking about.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Did you have anything to add to that? Any anecdote to share or continue on?
No, but speaking of large corporations, many of you may be a fan of the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. You know, it is kind of an institution, and sometimes we see some video game representation. And this year, in the 2025 Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, Mario will be a balloon in the parade. I think that's really cool.
Oh.
Let's just hope that he fares better than Sonic did back in the day. Remember that?
Oh, no. There are a couple of balloons that have had suboptimal experiences over the years. Let's hope Mario is not one of them.
Apparently, Goku and Monkey D. Luffy will also be in the parade. So, like, I have not watched a Thanksgiving Day parade in a long time, but Mario, Goku, and Luffy, like, let's fucking go.
Yes.
Oh, also Shrek's onion carriage will be there. Okay, well, I'm definitely making plans now.
All right, well, let me keep this ball a rolling then. We've also got the word here of the update that just happened this past Thursday. This was to Marvel Rivals introducing a new PvE mode for Halloween. This is Marvel Zombies. It is a horde mode that is tied in to the recent 4-episode Marvel Zombies miniseries that is on Disney+. In this mode, you work alongside your teammates You get to choose between Thor, Blade, Magic, Jeff the Shark, and the Punisher to sweep through hordes of zombie enemies with supercharged powers and abilities. It is expected to last through the spooky season. A lot of folks, including Kotaku, as well as Paul Tassi over on Forbes, have speculated that they have made this announcement to try and staunch the bleeding. It is widely believed that they've lost largely 85% of the huge player base that they had enjoyed earlier this year. Concurrent player counts are just under, but sort of near the 100,000 player point at this point, whereas consistently it was well over 500,000. Just a year ago. Obviously, we do expect a certain amount of attrition, but things don't sound the bestest for Marvel Rivals. As a general fan of the game, I hope this helps and brings people back. Slaggy, have you checked out PvE zombie mode, or do you have any interest in such a thing?
I have not yet. I am interested. I am one of those 85%, unfortunately. Not that reading the comment section is always a great idea, but one of the commenters is talking about the fact that just like, especially if you go in solo queue, like it's just really the balance in terms of like, not the balance of the characters necessarily, but just like getting your ass handed to you. And yeah. I definitely feel like I experienced that, where it's kind of like, yeah, I feel like, it's not fun when I'm continually losing.
Yeah, no, I feel that.
I think PvE modes in PvP games is a great idea. Bring them on. Bring more of these, please.
Let's see. Courtesy of Time Extension, we have a great piece here about Nobuo Uematsu. Uematsu-san basically has gone on the record saying that he has never used AI and probably never will. He went on to note that for him, it still feels more rewarding to go through the hardships of creating something myself. I don't know. I think it is useful, interesting, and encouraging every time I hear a creator whom I like and respect talk about their refusal to integrate AI into their workflows, and particularly to hear the reasons why. I had seen this meme a couple weeks ago, and it made me laugh because I thought it was kind of true. It basically said, AI did something that religion was never able to do, and it convinced me of the proof of the existence of the human soul, because it showed me what art looks like when it's created without a soul. And it's like, yeah. Wow, I get it, because honestly, I kind of get it. If you really do want to see proof of the spark of human imagination, compare an AI composition to one made by a genuine person. These machines aren't creating, unfortunately, and a lot of people, unfortunately, are being misled. Yeah.
Tell that to Matt Schumann.
Yeah. We also have word here of the recent Silent Hill 2 remake. Across its shipments and digital sales, it has moved more than 2.5 million units. This brings the series overall across the 10 million units shipped line. This is obviously a huge success for publisher Konami and developer Bloober Team. Obviously, we know that Bloober Team is also working on a remake now of the original Silent Hill. And we also, by all accounts, have every word that Silent Hill F is also doing well. So it looks like we are in another renaissance of Silent Hill.
Good for Silent Hill 2.
Yes.
All right. So you remember when Randy P said Borderlands 4 is a premium game for premium gamers? You remember that?
I do.
He also went on record saying like, like those deep discounts for the Handsome Collection or whatever it was, where like, for a certain point of time, you could pick up the whole Borderlands series for like 80% off or whatever. So like, he was like, it's going to take a very long time before we see Borderlands 4 going on sale. It's already on sale. It's already on sale for 20% off. It is only on PC. This is likely due to some of the performance issues, but LOL, Randy.
I do and do not feel bad for Randy Pitchford, in the sense, right, that like, he kind of set himself up here. You know, they've had a little bit of a soft launch on PC because the whole premium game, premium players. And so you're expecting everyone to have super beefy hardware when just that's not whether where the market is right now. People don't have the money to upgrade their PCs. But I know there's a constant demand that every new iteration be the newest, biggest, bestest version. We're seeing that happen over with Pokemon right now. So I do have a little bit of sympathy for Randy Pitchford, but he's also in between a rock and a hard place that he put there himself. If he had had a more gracious attitude about a lot of this stuff, I think people would be cutting him and his studio a lot more slack. But when you're coming out here and basically doing this bootstraps shit, and then you're the one having a soft launch, it's like, okay, girl, where are your bootstraps now? Because, I mean, you know, make no mistake, it is pull yourself up by your bootstraps mentality to be saying, oh, you'll find a job to buy your whatever. I have had a job when I was a teen to get my games. Or the way he's like, this is a premium game for premium customers. It's the same bootstraps rhetoric.
Wasn't it at like the ice cream, like Baskin Robbins?
Yes, or, you know? Yes, that was exactly.
I don't even think it was Baskin Robbins.
Yeah, it was an ice cream parlor of some kind.
I feel sorry for those people who had to get ice cream from him. Sorry, I can't with Randy. I can't. Sorry.
No, totally. Like, I want to have sympathy, but he does it to himself.
Indeed. No sympathy for the devil, right? Randy's Let's not the see. Devil.
We also have word here. This is coming out of XSEED Games. This was word come out last Friday that they had run into a unanticipated complication regarding its planned release of the Corpse Party Tetralogy Pack game collection, and that this could potentially be preventing its release for the Switch platform in the Americas.
Oh no.
Yeah, this is, of course, unfortunate. Corpse Party has been a fan favorite horror series since the PSP era, from my perspective. The games have been remade and ported across quite a few platforms over the years. PC, Switch, PlayStation, Xbox Series. It's always unfortunate when we hear that one of these releases isn't able to come to market. We will keep you apprised of any updates we hear.
Good.
This is a little bit of an interesting culture story. Basically, the secondhand store Hard Off, which is a funny name for a store, but is, I want to note, Hard Off is a spinoff of like the Book Off branding. It is one of like the biggest,
right?
Right. And so it's one of like the biggest and coolest used electronic store I've been to in my entire life. It's a whole chain. They're all across the areas of Japan that we were in Tokyo and, you know, the other cities. They also have them in a couple of places here in the US, including LA and Hawaii. It's my understanding you can get some import stuff at these locations pretty easily. Just incredibly, incredibly cool stores, tons of cool, weird, interesting hardware. I bought a Japanese Final Fantasy VI arcade cartridge for Super Famicom that had the battery removed. So it was specifically being sold as a display piece for like 300 yen, like $3 practically. Uh-huh. And I got it there. I in fact put it in like a shadow box that's mounted on the wall of our downstairs atelier here. Anyway, my point is, incredibly cool store, tons of really cool unexpected merch that is almost targeted for folks like us. This specific one in Seki in Gifu in Japan, they had one of the legendary Japanese Game Boy demo stations. This was like one of the like giant wall-mounted Game Boy units that had these giant buttons that actually worked, and you basically like, you couldn't really seriously play a game, but you'd, you know, play a game using this big silly mock-up. Half of the novelty was of playing a original Game Boy game on a TV size display during an era where that wasn't really otherwise possible.
So it's basically like the F.A.O. Schwartz giant piano.
Yeah, basically that, but a big Game Boy, right?
So cute.
So they had this demo station. They've had various demo stations like it at various of their stores. So I have seen not this exact model, but one fairly similar to it. apparently this station actually sold recently. It was no longer at the store, I guess. So the Japan-based staff at Anime News Network asked about it. And apparently the demo station ended up selling for almost $14,500 or otherwise 2.2 million yen. Just a really interesting and kind of wild story in terms of both a really cool shop that if you're into these kinds of things, you should probably be aware of, but also just a specific cool piece of kitsch. Slaggy, did you have any thoughts on this?
That's super cute. I wish I had one because I have such a hard off for this giant Game Boy.
Ah, I see what you did there. Well done. We also have word both that Sonic Racing Crossworlds sales have topped the 1 million units sold mark, as well as that they have brought Joker from Persona 5 into the game, alongside a new vehicle and a new set of Persona 5 songs for the in-game jukebox. If nice. You're a fan of the game, as I am, this is exciting stuff.
Excellent. And closing it out with some more Sega-related news, we have the reveal of the final boss for the Sega Villain stage, which is, of course, part of the Shinobi Art of Vengeance DLC. This is going to be the Mad Dog of Shimano himself, Majima. Of course, from the Ryu Gagatoku series.
Excellent. I'm really excited for this DLC, even though I have to admit that having Majima as the final boss for me was a little anticlimactic, as I kind of view him as more of like an anti-hero rather than an outright villain in the Yakuza Ryu Gagatoku games. That having been said, I still think this is a really cool concept for a DLC stage, and I'm still really excited to see both the stage and how they implement Majima.
Yeah, well, you know, it must be exhausting always rooting for the anti-hero.
Ah!
So, you know, I heard that there's pirate Yakuza in Hawaii, and that there might be hetero Yakuza in Idaho.
Super.
You're living in your own private Idaho. Living in your own private Idaho.
Look, I am sure there are very nice parts of Idaho that are not full of bigoted people.
Let's hope.
So this is some, I would say it's exciting news, but it's not really news yet, but it's just, it's delightful to see nonetheless. This comes out of IGN, and they're reporting that Jennifer Hale, who, you know, needs no introduction, honestly, but among many other things, is the beloved voice of, who is commonly known as Femme Shep, but why it gotta be Femme, otherwise known as Commander Jane Shepard, was asked if she would do a voice for the fifth Mass Effect game, if asked. She said, "I love that universe. I'm ready anytime." She would voice any character, even a Krogan. So let's just hope that Mass Effect 5 actually gets a chance to be made, given the EA everything.
Yeah, giving the buyout of it all, it's not encouraging times, but we're going to try to stay hopeful.
Let's let BioWare get a new owner who will take care of it and feed it and take it for walkies, and then can get Jennifer Hale on board for some voices. Because why just one voice? Hire her to do multiple voices, but of course pay her appropriately.
Yeah, she can do a Krogan. Why not?
Yeah, she is legendary. And now I kind of want to go in, because I've never actually done a Femme Shep.
Oh, snap, figure. You should do a Femme Shep and do a Renegade. She is so good.
Boss
Renegade
bitch.
Femme Shep is so good. Boss as hell.
I haven't played Mass Effect in so long. I am overdue.
Excellent. I think that's a good idea. We have here a little bit of a surprising announcement. This is word that Quantic Dream, probably most known for their almost like interactive movie style games, typically, you know, single player, very story focused, often kind of limited player inputs, is apparently working on a competitive multiplayer game. This is the hero shooter known as Spellcasters. Obviously, it's very different from everything that they've done previously. It looks a little bog standard by the reveal teaser, but I will note, given that it is meant to be a 3v3 game rather than a 6v6 game, I actually do think it could end up carving an interesting niche. This is one that I will have my eyes open on as it further develops.
Yeah, I see some basically night elves, and I'm like, yes.
Right? Let's see. We also had the announcement that next year in January, the Dragon Ball IP holders are going to be holding an event known as Dragon Ball Genkidama Matsuri. This is the Dragon Ball Spirit Bomb Festival. It is going to be at the Makuhari Messe Convention Center in Chiba. This will be celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Dragon Ball franchise.
Holy smokes.
This is January 25th, 2026. Masako Nozawa, the voice of Son Goku, will be appearing at least two stage events. Entry to the festival is free, but they are doing raffles for tickets to attend. Now, the most interesting thing here is that we're expecting at least three big pieces of news to drop out of this event. One of them is relevant for this show. That is that we are expecting the next major Dragon Ball game project to be announced at this event. I would have been guessing on a FighterZ 2 announcement up until that recent FighterZ DLC announcement. Now I don't know what's coming. I don't think it's a FighterZ 2, although I'd still love to be wrong. And then the other thing, although not as relevant to our show, but probably still relevant to many of our listeners, is that they're also expected to announce two other Dragon Ball multimedia projects. I know many of us are hoping at least one of them to be a movie or TV anime, and the other to be a revival of the Dragon Ball Super manga, which has been on hiatus ever since Toriyama-san passed away. It was no longer even being drawn by Toriyama-san, so many of us assume that there are other complicating factors behind the scenes rather than it strictly being a production issue. I hope that things have been resolved. I hope that they're able to continue developing the various stories and branches of the franchise as the fans would like to see them developed. Slaggy, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I just want more Dragon Ball. It's legendary.
Absolutely. And then before I throw it back...
And beloved. I was going to say, and beloved, and Toriyama-san's creativity and beloved characters live on.
Absolutely. We also got the announcement here that 12 classic Japanese shoot-em-ups that had been licensed by City Connection for publishing are set to be permanently removed from Steam starting October 31st. These are all classic titles developed by Saikyo. We're talking about the Strikers 1945 series 1, 2, and 3, as well as the Gunbird series and Gunbarik, as well as that the Samurai Aces games 1, 2, and 3, Soul Divide, Dragon Blaze, and Zero Gunner 2. I have most of these games on my Switch already. This is about PC via Steam, but I do wonder if we won't see some of these games' availability on the platform's various platform holders' shops not also be impacted given time. If you're a fan of these games, like I am, I would recommend you get your access locked in while you have it, right?
Indeed. This is a cute little, I can't even really call it news, but Kotaku ran an article about the fact that there is only one Pokemon, and by extension, its evolution, that can be caught in every Pokemon RPG at this point. Up until ZA came out, you were able to find Psyduck and Magnemite, even if it was through once they added DLC and other means. But now, at this moment, Magikarp is the only Pokemon you can catch in every Pokemon RPG, to which I say, Corp Corp.
This is really notable for me, because I always end up raising a Magikarp, and by extension Gyarados, as a part of my team on basically all of these games. Zeta A was no different, and in fact,
yeah,
Gyarados was one of the few Pokemon I had with me the entire game, where because like my back three slots were basically revolving the entire time. So I don't know. It's pretty interesting that this is the case, though. I will admit, as you noted, it's not exactly a news story, but I did find it an interesting data point.
Yeah.
We also had the announcement. This was coming out of Punkle. This is about Vampire Survivors, the well-loved Vampire Survivors Ode to Castlevania DLC is getting an update. This is going to be adding even more characters, as well as new weapons and powers, and even a new stage to the already quite voluminous Ode to Castlevania DLC. These Vampire Survivor updates and DLCs have been crazy because they cram-pack them full of content and then sell them for a very low price, typically only a couple of bucks. This is all coming actually alongside what they keep referring to as their biggest ever expansion. This is a huge update that's coming to both the core game and a bunch of the previous expansions, just getting free updates to them. It's all going to be going live, as I understand it, on October 28th. So if you, like me, are a fan of Vampire Survivors, get ready for a frightfully good time this Halloween.
Excellent.
We also have word of the upcoming horror Metroidvania. This is Silver Pines, and it is due on the PlayStation 5, Xbox Series, Switch, and PC platforms in 2026. This is coming from publisher Team 17, whom I still think of largely as the Worms publisher. I'm predominantly interested in this, as the works of David Lynch are meant to be a major inspiration to the game. This does seem apparent upon looking at most of its images. We also got a really weirdly timed announced update for Pikmin 4. This is an upcoming free update for Pikmin 4 that is coming in November. This is going to be bringing decor Pikmin from Pikmin Bloom, as well as an in-game camera and new difficulty customization options. It sounds kind of like a little bit of a meaty free update for a game so old. I'm a little surprised. I wonder if we won't eventually hear about either a Pikmin 5 or a Pikmin 2 Switch 2 or Pikmin 4 Switch 2 edition.
Oh, maybe both.
Indeed. Let's see. We also got the announcement that on Thursday or Friday, depending on which region you were in of last week, Persona 3 Reload got a new update that added 8 new songs to the in-game music selection list. This is all very exciting stuff, of course, as fans of the original Persona 3 vocalist Yumi Kawamura are now going to have access to those songs in the new version of the game. I think that's really exciting stuff, and I will probably listen to some of these when I revisit Persona 3 Reload, as I still haven't done the Aegis content in that version of the game. Saiki, did you have any thoughts on that?
That's very cool, because we all know that Persona music is hella good.
Absolutely. And then we also got the announcement. It was a little bit surprising for me. This is the upcoming Final Fantasy VII Ever Crisis Final Fantasy XIII crossover event.
Oh,
this is scheduled to start next week. It is going to feature new costumes for all of the Final Fantasy set, for several of the Final Fantasy VII characters, based on various outfits from Final Fantasy XIII. But it is also going to feature a Final Fantasy XIII crossover story event. And that was what really took me by surprise. I was not expecting a new little original mini scenario being written involving Cloud and Company crossing over with Lightning and friends. I'm really excited for this. I mean, you know, if phone game excited. I will check it out. As I have noted, I do have an Ever Crisis account that is leveled. I've put a fair amount of time into it over the years, and I just keep it updated. I'll check this out, and I'm kind of into it. Slaggy, what are your thoughts?
I know that there are a handful of people out there who will be very excited about this. I was thinking of a specific mutual of mine who loves 13. And
yes. The thing that's interesting to me is, like, Final Fantasy 13 is barely even available in the modern day. It's like, you can get the old versions on PC. You can run them in backwards compatibility on the series, Xbox Series platforms. But, like, it's not super accessible otherwise. I don't know. Them doing new content for it makes me wonder if we're not at least going to get a port to modern gen consoles. Getting Final Fantasy 13 ported to PS4/5 and Switch would be really great, I think.
Yeah.
Also, a non backwards compatibility version for Xbox would be great, so it could use some of those more modern hardware features. It's my understanding that there's at least one spot in, I think it was the second Final Fantasy 13 game, where I think there's an on-screen element that just tanks the on-screen frame rate on when you're running it in backwards compatibility. I had always heard that they ran basically perfectly, and that was my understanding with the first one, which is the only one I played all the way through in backwards compatibility mode. But my understanding is that the sequels do not hold up as well performance-wise, unfortunately.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, indeed. But again, would be great to have some modern ports. I think it's time.
Yeah, I agree. And last in Idaho here, we have some comments from Phil Spencer. This is kind of having to do with, a couple months ago, as we had heard about a lot of turnover and layoffs in the Microsoft gaming realm. Turn 10 Studios was also impacted by these. Of course, they are developing the Forza Motorsport series. Phil Spencer was asked if Forza Motorsport is dead. He immediately said no, and basically just said, we sometimes have to shift our focus to games that will be released earlier. And I also understand that many people reacted when the scale of Turn 10 Studios was reduced. As far as we are concerned, there are many games we would like to support carefully, and sometimes we give the development team a little more time so that they do not continue to be in a state of tension. So I kind of suspect that they're waiting for this next-gen premium Xbox. These Forza Motorsport games tend to be, like, you know, taking full advantage of all of the graphical capabilities, and I can see them wanting to make it a flagship launch title for the upcoming, most likely to come, console. So I guess for now, if you want to get some Forza action, you'll just have to do some Tokyo drifting in the next Forza Horizon game.
Indeed. I have to say, I think your speculation is likely spot on. We have seen them launch with Forza games, although I think typically more with the Forza Horizon series. But as you note, these motorsport games do tend to be real crowd pleasers, so I wouldn't be shocked if they really tried to lean in on that for a new generation to try and impress with their first impressions. So I think that's very astute, and we'll keep our eyes open.
Yeah. You know, I heard that they're actually going to be collaborating with Koei Tecmo to do a Dead or Alive crossover driving simulation game but actually it's not just driving. It's, you know, of course, Dead or Alive is well known for the beach volleyball, and this is going to be kind of like a wave race game. It's called Forza Motorboat. Sorry, that
girl.
All that setup was not working.
Forza Motorboat, Dead or Alive team. Wow.
Rumor has it we have some rumors this week.
Oh, do we? Why don't you tell me a little bit about that?
Rumor has it.
All right, well, speaking of next-gen Xboxes, we kind of hinted at this earlier, and also next-gen PlayStation. So a lot of buzz coming out lately. The first, this is both of these rumors are very nicely in one article over on VGCharts.com. And the rumor about upcoming PlayStation, PS6 for simplicity's sake, comes from an AMD insider named Kepler L2, posting over on NeoGAF. It was talking about the recent Future of Play video that Sony and AMD did. Kepler L2 claims that PS6 is set for a 2027 release, and that, quote, it's not just on the table, it's the plan, unless any unexpected delays happen. You know, like, hopefully not another global pandemic. Also, the hardware insider known as Moore's Law is Dead, MLID, released a new video that reportedly shows the AMD Magnus APU, which is allegedly going to be part of that next-gen Xbox. According to MLID, this device is going to be stronger than the PS6, but also more expensive, rumored to be an $800 to $1,000 price tag. You know, so this kind of really seems to line up with what Sarah Bond said about a premium experience from the Xbox brand.
Yeah, you know, I have to be honest. When I think about this, It's like, I hope this works out for you guys. It's gonna be very difficult for me to buy a console that's in that price range. And I have typically been a supporter of the Xbox platform.
Mm-hmm.
That having been said, when my current PC dies, I just got it, so it's not going to be for a while. If the next Xbox really is just a hella fancy PC and it's a reliable pre-built, maybe I'll consider that to replace this box when the day comes.
Yeah.
But like, that's down the line, girl.
Yep. I mean, but I hear that. I mean, I have a PS5 Pro, and I mean, that was a pricey bit of tech, so I do not regret it, but yeah, like, consoles?
No, I would love to have a 5 Pro, but like, I just can't really justify the price.
Well, you know, hold out for 2 more years, and you'll probably be able to get a PS6. Damn, I can't believe we're already, I mean, but then again, Nintendo, with its release cadence, is kind of, you know, what, 2 or 3 years ahead of Sony and Microsoft for, you know, their releases. So I wouldn't say ahead, because Nintendo consoles are so underpowered. And now that the PS6 and Xbox Series ABC DEFG,
it's more like they're 8 years behind the others.
Yeah, yeah. Anyways, what you got going for us next?
We have what looks like a pretty reliable rumor at this point, because the story has come a little ways since the story I was going to link you over at on Kotaku. We will still link you to this Kotaku piece over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
The headline is, Fortnite's map will reportedly turn into Springfield from The Simpsons next month. This is an article about the recurring rumors that keep popping up that suggest, you know, as noted, that the next season of Fortnite, or at least the next mini season, is going to be centered around Simpsons and transform the entire game island into, you know, the Springfield map. There have now in the live game, popped up both a cel shaded tree and multiple in-game art assets that have popped up with like El Barto graffiti on them.
Oh, wow.
So it has been definitely officially teased in game now for sure. It seems like a lock that this is definitely happening. And I have to tell you, as a Simpsons fan since I was a single digit child, I have to be honest, I'm looking forward to it. I got a real kick out of that incredible Simpsons game that EA did back in the 360 generation. I often wish that game would come back often. The idea of at least getting to traipse around in Springfield for a month in Fortnite might not be equivalent, but a next best thing. I'll take it.
And back to some other Xbox rumors. Apparently, due to macroeconomic developments, if you want an Xbox Series XS development kit, it now will cost $2,000 instead of $1,500.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's my understanding that Moon Studios, the folks who made Ori and the Blind Forest, had actually recently suggested that even their new game, No Rest for the Wicked, may be skipping the Xbox platform at launch due to the investment just not being worth the payoff right now. So that's not a good sign, and it really does raise concerns about what Microsoft is doing managing this whole brand. I don't think they're making the choices that grow the brand right now, and I don't understand why.
Oh.
And then last, but certainly not least, we have persistent rumors. We are going to be remarking here on an article on mpfirst.com. We'll link you over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
But this is basically suggesting that the rumors that have been long suggesting since at least 2024 that the next big Resident Evil remake is going to be Resident Evil Zero or Code Veronica, this is suggesting that it is going to be Resident Evil Zero. It suggests that not only are they discussing some of the new cast and plot details, but actually what I had found most interesting is that there is apparently reason to believe that voice and performance capture work with the new actors actually had already begun sometime last year. So that does suggest that this game could be a little deeper in development than many of us had previously expected. I'm going to keep my eyes open on this one because, again, there have been rumors about this for a long time, and we tend to start talking about the rumors once we've gotten to the point where there's so much smoke we can't ignore the fire anymore. So it does make me wonder, how much longer will it be until something is announced?
I wonder.
All of this having been done, all of this having been said, I think it's time, girl, for The Unforgiven 2. Horror games again. All right, so as noted this week, this is actually another iteration of the Game Boy Remake project because we are revisiting a previously recorded episode.
Been so long.
It really has, actually. This episode refers to Game Boy Podcast episode 39 as recorded originally on October 28th, 2013. So, yeah, we're going back almost 12 years to the date, right?
Oh, see, I meant it's been so long since we've done a Game Boy Remake project, like, so long ago.
I'm screaming. That's hilarious. So we're going to follow up on an episode originally titled Werewolf Bar Mitzvah. As we tend to do on these remake episodes, I am going to give you our previous topic discussion description, but then I'm just going to follow up with talking points rather than summarize that entire discussion again. The reason for that is that it was a recommendation discussion rather than being about history or like specific politics. And so I don't necessarily think summarizing a recommendation discussion makes as much sense. You feel me? So, basically, the discussion we're following up on was summarized and described as such. This week, things are spooky scary on Game Boy as the podcast pirates discuss notable horror games, featuring a handful of ghoulish greats and a few moldy oldies that you may have missed. Captain Spike and First Mate Slagkick discuss release information, facts, and impressions of Alan Wake, Uninvited and Shadowgate, Resident Evil 4, Silent Hill Shattered Memories, and Fatal Frame. They also examine the idea of horror as a motif in video games rather than a genre, and how these games exemplify it or do not. Back then, we had had a fairly wide-reaching conversation about horror games. We were also very focused on then already moldy oldies that we had felt that players should check out if they were into visiting some older games for some spookier themes for their Halloween gaming time. It's kind of funny to think about how many older games we talked about back then, you know, games that were at the time already quite old and now are straight up not even available on the market anymore, practically. It really does remind me that we do need to keep preservation in mind, basically outside of like Alan Wake, Uninvited, Shadowgate, Resident Evil, Silent Hill, Fatal Frame. Like, the other stuff we talked about, it was like, what am I even effing on now? Like, where would I even find these games to play in the modern age?
Well, I mean, even I was curious about going back and comparing modern Silent Hill 2 to the original, and like, there's no easy way to play it unless you have a PS2 and maybe a PS3 that plays the PS2 discs. Like,
and in that regard, right, it kind of harkens back to that GOG story that we had talked about a couple of weeks ago, where GOG had found that working with Capcom to get the Resident Evil games on their service, Capcom was like, why would people want to play the old games? They've been remade. And GOG had to be like, no, Capcom, I promise you there's a market for this. Please work with us. And thankfully they did. And now they're continuing to, you know, even let them do ports of, you know, Dino Crisis because the Resident Evil ones went so well. But it was for me really eye-opening that, yeah, like you say, even some of these like marquee games that shouldn't have been lost to time, we only now really have easy access to their remade, remastered new versions rather than the original versions. And I don't always think that's a good thing. Anyway, for the discussion we were having some 12 years ago, at the time, the vibes were a little bit more on horror as an up-and-coming genre. I had noted then, you know, that we did already have Dead by Daylight in existence, but it wasn't the online horror juggernaut that it is today. And, you know, via its success, Dead by Daylight, we ended up with an entire subgenre of you know, clone games and other online multiplayer horror experiences really, particularly for me, it was a real COVID experience, but like online horror games were a huge part of like coping with social distancing for a lot of PC players. And as a result, you know, we typically, I think of Animal Crossing as having gotten the real benefit from all of us having been gaming at home during that period of time. But I really think the PC online horror space benefited as much, if not more, when I look at how games like Dead by Daylight, Phasmophobia, SCP Containment Breach, even Among Us, which is kind of not quite horror, but is a part of this discussion, right? Just all of these games absolutely flourished and became absolute juggernauts.
Yeah, I mean, I basically refer to these types of asymmetric horror games as Dead by Daylights because, I mean...
Ah, that's good.
That's like, you know, we've seen it like now branching into the horror movie game tie-ins, right? And I mean, like...
Well, and not just branching out, we've actually already had at least one of those live service games live its whole life and become a dead service game. Friday the 13th in particular.
Yeah.
So I meant that additively. Please, if you had something more to say, say it.
No, just that that seems to have really been a gameplay style that really kind of seems like, a really natural fit for, you know, these types of horror movies where it's a big bad chasing after, you know, usually some teenagers trying to kick some monster ass.
Yeah, well, I do. I agree, actually. I think that an asymmetric game design is a really clever way to gamify the traditional horror movie setup, right? Like you say.
Yeah, I'm ready for a Child's Play asymmetric game.
Ah, although I'm pretty sure Chucky is in Dead by Daylight already.
Yeah, but I mean, I just want to be able to play as Tiffany and have her wisecracking.
All right. With these previous talking points in mind, then, we're going to kind of structure this set of recommendations of what to play with in the current state of the art around three talking points as our kind of pillars. We're going to talk about the online horror boom, which we just talked about, and then we'll move on to talking about some of the recent horror remakes, because we really felt like that was the birthing place of the larger narrative horror renaissance that we were sort of talking about, the sort of boon that we have seen in these Resident Evil and Silent Hill remakes, which have themselves been ongoing sub-series within their larger series since, you know, the Nintendo 64, GameCube eras, practically. I'll note this isn't really meant to be an exhaustive history lesson. It is just a collection of recommendations that is informed by our previous conversation that we had, as well as by our tastes, obviously. We will do our best to provide context on these titles, and hopefully it will be helpful to you this Halloween and beyond.
Ooh. From the beyond. Oh,
indeed. All right. Well, then, with that having been said, I would like to start with the online horror boom as we feel it. I think this is probably the biggest story in horror gaming over the last 12 years, you know, since we recorded that initial episode. Asymmetric horror games have blown up in a huge way. We kind of talked about why we think that is the right fit for these kinds of power imbalanced scenarios, right? Often these games are like one versus many affairs. They pit one player character with increased in-game abilities against the other team of like less powerful survivors, whom typically, because there are more of them, they have more resources than you know, the single player who is a powerful monster. Then those survivors sort of have to pool their resources and overcome the uneven odds. I actually think it makes a lot of sense. For me, this gameplay style that we really have seen pioneered and executed at a high level by, you know, Dead by Daylight, by the Jason game, the Friday the 13th, that is, I believe they are doing the Texas Chainsaw game and soon to be the Halloween game, right?
Yeah.
I feel like this game design has come so far since... God, that old 2K Games game, Evolve. Do you remember Evolve?
Vaguely.
It was an asymmetric multiplayer game where one player played as like a kaiju, and then the rest of the team played as like human sized kaiju hunters, basically. And you, as the monster, you were trying to kill the enemies to get power ups to stay more powerful than the humans, who were, their game was like going through the map to try and get bigger and better guns so they could take on the monster. I had a good time with it. It absolutely flopped, but we talked about it a little bit in the older days when it was still a live game before it went out of service. I feel like a lot of these online games actually owe Evolve a huge debt in terms of sort of pioneering that asymmetrical horror design space. That having been said, I've actually played a fair number of these games. Dead by Daylight, I've probably put dozens of hours into. I am more or less a fan. I do have some problems with the fact that so much of the add-on DLC content that they have added, they don't appear to have like cleared for really long times. So it's not that uncommon in Dead by Daylight for a collab to only be available for like a year, and then they're like, oh, we're removing the Stranger Things stuff now. And it's like, Jesus, this sucks. Still, I think it's overall a cool game. I think that the tension of playing against someone you know or don't know who is hunting you while they have a vast assortment of tools that you do not have ends up creating the kind of tension that I think is really fun to engage with in a horror game. In a lot of cases in game design, I view gameplay tension as necessary, but something you don't want too much of. In horror games specifically, I think the balance actually should be trending a little more strongly toward tension. And so a situation like Dead by Daylight, and I do prefer to play as a survivor, I actually find that to be a very tense gameplay experience, but in the fun way, the kind of way that you come to horror for tension.
Yeah.
That was actually a concept that we talked about a lot in our original conversation on this topic 12 years ago, was sort of the gameplay tension involved in survival horror games, for example. You know, the tension inherent in needing ammo for your guns to work, but not having ammo, right?
Yeah. And I think with the passage of time, like, it's easier to kind of reflect on that and appreciate those game design choices.
Yeah, well, and one that I was really thinking about you with regard in, and, you know, we're not quite talking about the other genres at the moment, but I really like the way that the Silent Hill games, for example, and particularly in the older iterations, would really de-emphasize combat and in fact, I would argue even punish you for being overly combat hungry. And the older Silent Hill games ended up being more about exploring a liminal space and trying to find your way out rather than trying to crush all opposition or whatever, you know, very gamified approach the things have become.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very excited to play Silent Hill F. The reason it's not a part of this episode discussion is because I haven't gotten to it yet. I am a little concerned that I've heard that there is almost a Souls style combat focus in that one. And for me, I'm like, that goes so far away from what I'm expecting of Silent Hill. But I am willing to give it the benefit of the doubt because I've heard very good things about it. So I suspect that what I'm expecting isn't really going to be what I'm faced with when I get there. I just kind of have to get over my expectations now.
Yeah. Should we move on to those horror remakes and,
So the one other game I wanted to note about the online horror boom is actually Phasmophobia, because is actually a little adjacent. Phasmophobia is not an asymmetric game. It's a low budget game, and I got in at a fairly low level floor. So I've seen the game really grow over the years, but you play along with, you or like three friends, so it's like a four-player co-op. You're like doing paranormal investigation, and so each player is going to take in like one piece of tech. Like, maybe you're going to take in your like electromagnetic voice recorder to see if you can pick up like the weird voices,
or like maybe you're a little child ghost being like, F you.
Yes, exactly that. Or maybe you're going to be the one to bring in like the flash thermometer that can tell if, you know, there's a sudden cold spot in the room where maybe a ghost is present, but you can't see them. Or maybe you're the one coming in with like the black light type gear. And basically you all have to come in and figure out not only what room of the house is haunted, but you also have to figure out like what specific ghost is it based on how it's responding to the various stimuli. And you have to do all of this while not making it so mad that it effing kills you.
Oh my God.
It's honestly a lot of fun when you're playing with a group of people who are like really into the experience. If I were trying to get a group together for like a Halloween game, Phasmophobia would actually be very high on list.
Yeah, I'm so sorry that I almost caused us to skip past that. That was very phasmophobic of me.
I'll also note SCP Containment Breach is another big one that is not strictly as Dead by Daylight-y. However, it's also of the assortment of games here, the one I have the least hands-on experience with, so I don't feel fully comfortable talking about it. It's more something I've watched a lot of people stream, and when people are streaming it, it's like, oh shit, it's that one. Oh shit, it's that one. But if you're into the SCP lore, it's definitely one that I think you would have a good time with. So now, now I'm prepared to move the conversation forward. And so I guess what I'd like to say here is that, you know, we all know the industry fell out of love a little bit with single player horror narratives. Obviously, this happened just before the sudden rise of multiplayer horror games. I don't think that's entirely coincidental. And of course, we all remember what Konami did to PT back when they were arguing that, you know, single player horror narratives were not a particularly profitable space for them to be playing in.
Yep.
Fortunately, though, you know, between both that company and their longtime publishing rivals Capcom, the horror, single-player horror narrative game market has actually been nurtured back to health a little bit. So I'd like to talk a little bit about these games, as well as a few others that we'd like to recommend. Obviously, the marquee title here is the Resident Evil Remake series, which is effectively functioning now as like a sub-franchise to the larger Resident Evil series. In fact, I was telling Slaggy in a direct message conversation we were having earlier this week talking about some of these games, that to me it's almost interesting because the Resident Evil remakes have so far been about remaking the older games in the style of Resident Evil 4 and sort of what this series became after Resident Evil 4. But since they have started the series of remakes, the more recent iterations of the series, Resident Evil 7 and 8 in particular, that being Biohazard and The Village, they have themselves pioneered a little bit of a different gameplay approach. So now it's almost like the remakes are bringing the older classic games up to a new spec that is itself now a little bit outmoded and classic. It's kind of an interesting and funny thing to think about via the function of time. Slaggy, do you have impressions firsthand or otherwise with the Resident Evil series and its remakes?
Yeah, you know, I did spend not a ton of time with Resident Evil 2, the remake, the modern remake, not any, well, I guess there was only the original Resident Evil on GameCube, right? So, like, I think this was the first time 2 did get remade. Anyway, I did spend a little time with it, and I mean, it is interesting, both in the context you said that it's not really the direction that Resident Evil as a franchise is going, but also just to upgrade it to modern sensibilities in a more general sense, because like one of the things that I always struggled with trying to play the original Resident Evils were the tank controls, of course. Now, probably sure, I didn't get a chance to re-listen to our episode from what, 13 years ago, 12 years ago, but I'm sure I probably talked about I can't do tank control. So
you did.
Yeah. So I'm not surprised. So, you know, I think the thing, and I'll talk about kind of Silent Hill as a contrast in a minute. I can appreciate what they did. I think that it seems like that is a solid approach for Resident Evil. I think Resident Evil games, generally speaking, are not for me. I wasn't like entirely terrified, but I was kind of like, after a certain point, I'm like, okay, you know, but I think the other thing that was interesting too is, you know, with the gift of some older age, you could say, you know, that like I can appreciate, like you said, those design choices, like, oh, you've got limited ammo, and like someone like me who is like having unlimited ammo or like just automatically reloading in a game, that's great because I just want to go like pew 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 pew. Or like, you know, even in Fortnite, having like fairly easy access to ammo, it's not often that you're going to be completely out of ammo.
Well, and you know, that actually runs up on exactly what I was saying a few minutes ago, though, about how as a genre in horror, you kind of want the gameplay balance to be tilted a little more toward the tension in this regard.
Right. So, I mean, I definitely don't think I would have been able to appreciate that in my 20s. I've just been like, oh, I don't have enough ammo to shoot the zombies, or why is the control so dumb? You know, I would hope I spoke a little more intelligently than that, but
I will say, for me, and I've told you this also via our direct message conversation about these games and contrasting them, but you bring up Silent Hill. For me, the big contrast point between the two has traditionally been that Resident Evil is a little bit more about, like, ultimately, you know, gearing up yourself and getting outfitted so that you can push back on the zombies and the monsters. You know, you gear up, you initially don't have enough ammo, and you always have to manage your ammo. But after a point, you do have the means to push back. Whereas for me, the best iterations of Silent Hill have often been about largely avoiding combat and just trying to survive the evil that is oppressing you from around the edges, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and to that end, it's my understanding you spent a little time with Silent Hill, right?
Yeah, I've put maybe like 2 or 3 hours, so not like, I'm not like close to completing it by any means, but I did check out Silent Hill 2, and I mean, I think that, as you said, that it's really interesting that the tension in the Silent Hill games, that I did play a little bit of Shattered Memories on the Wii, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, you talked about it in that old episode, yeah.
Yeah, but honestly, it's been so long that I don't really remember a lot of it at all. But it's just interesting what a contrast it is from Resident Evil. I feel like these two franchises are always kind of discussed together, but I mean, really, they're doing very different things. And honestly, for me, like, playing Silent Hill 2, I really commend Bloober Team for what they did. Like, and, you know, I can't speak to the original Silent Hill 2 because I never got around to playing it. But, you know, just the sense of atmosphere that it brings. And I'll talk a little bit more about it in my What's Up. But I just think it's interesting, the differing sources of tension. And just my understanding, just from what I've gathered, and I don't know if you have a different experience, is that, even though, you know, there probably are some elements that are a little bit more updated for modern sensibilities, that it probably is a little closer to more of what the original Silent Hill games were doing than what Resident Evil has done with their remakes.
Yeah, I do think that that is a fair statement to make. I thought the Silent Hill 2 remake was really well done in how tasteful it was in bringing things up to modern spec, so to speak. Whereas sometimes these Resident Evil games, I'm kind of like, wow, y'all did too much on this one. I think it was the Resident Evil 3 remake where I really felt like they kind of dropped the ball on changing stuff. And I did not feel that way about Silent Hill 2 at all. I was really, really impressed. I had gone into it with a little bit of trepidation based on Blooper Team's reputation, and now I am just wholeheartedly excited for their interpretation of the first game. Even some of the stuff that I was really worried about them handling a little tastelessly, I think ended up playing much better than I had been fearing. So approval and excitement from me. It is also really worth noting, you know, Shattered Memories itself was a remake of the original Silent Hill, so to speak.
Yeah.
So it could be considered to be a cousins with the upcoming modern remake that is going to be coming out of Blooper Team, presumably in the next year or two.
Yeah, but I mean, I assume that the Silent Hill 1 remake is just going to be a straight remake, because Shattered Memories was almost sort of a rebuild of Silent Hill, right?
Yeah, very much.
Kind of like meta narrative, etc.
Soft reimagining, yeah. Yeah, and it did have some meta narrative elements to it. You're absolutely right.
Ooh, we love that.
We sure do. We should also, we'd be remiss not to mention Fatal Frame in this conversation. I think that the Wii edition is probably going to be at the exact moment the easiest version for people to get a hold of. There are, that would be Fatal Frame 2. There are modern releases of some of the other iterations of the Fatal Frame series, although I don't have hands-on experience with all of them, so I can't directly recommend them as easily. I can note that I'm very excited for the upcoming modern remake that we have talked about in previous weeks.
Yeah.
And by that same energy, there is a modern remake of Dead Space that brought a great deal of focus and prestige back to that series, although unfortunately, I have not yet heard any positive word about a Dead Space 2 remake.
And, you know, Electronic Arts.
Yep, it's kind of a big rain cloud right now. Everything related to EA, it's like, well, hopefully that will happen someday. Hopefully that will be allowed to exist. Hopefully they will be allowed to create that. It's a little depressing.
Yeah, but I did hear that that Dead Space remake was pretty well received.
Yeah, indeed. I'd also like to point in the direction of House of the Dead 1 and 2. Although I have to note that if you were to utilize the modern remasters, they might be a little horrific in a different way.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then, Slaggy, I believe you were the one who had added to the list the Dead Rising Deluxe Remaster. I thought that was a really good pick, bringing the big Day of the Dead vibes, everything going wrong in a mall. Oh, that was Dawn of the Dead, right? Or it's one of them. I don't know anymore. Either way, I'm a big fan of the Dead Rising series. We've talked about this many times over the years. It was interesting to see it get another re-release, but I'm also not mad about it, as having the games I like ported to the modern generation so that they can take advantage of modern hardware calls is something I have talked about multiple times in this episode alone. So I'm glad that option exists for Dead Rising, and that actually might be the one that I revisit this Halloween. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, I think I'm due for a Dead Rising revisit.
Yeah, and I know that they call it a remaster, but I mean, they rebuilt it using the RE engine. So I mean, I feel like in some ways it almost might be more of a remake, kind of like in between.
Yeah, I am inclined to agree. I'm looking it up right now, and yeah, it looks like it is a full graphical overhaul of the game using RE engine. I do wonder if maybe it's not still running the same game logic underneath that. Yeah. But either way, and that might be why they're still referring to it as a deluxe remaster. But either way, I mean, my understanding is that it was well received, and I didn't revisit it when it released. So I'm like, maybe it's time.
Yeah, and I mean, like, you think about how Crisis Core basically looks like a whole new game. So
I think that can be a really compelling approach. We've talked about that in some of our remake discussions, but I do think it can be a compelling approach, and hopefully it will be here.
Yeah, well, I think it's time to strip Frank West down to his boxers.
It is always time for that. Then let us move to our third pillar and start wrapping up our horror recommendations for our listener this Halloween season. Let's talk about some narrative-driven horror games. We would obviously be remiss to start out on anything other than Until Dawn. Until Dawn was effectively an interactive movie by Supermassive Games. Frankly, I think it's an interactive movie that is so good that it is responsible for why they made a movie out of it. Unfortunately, the movie is not that good, so maybe don't watch it and just play the original game instead, or even the remake of the original game, since it has also been remade, but we're mentioning it here rather than the remakes because I'm of the opinion the original version of the game was perfectly fine in the first place and it didn't need to be remade. Slaggy, I have to ask, have you played Until Dawn before? Are you familiar with it?
I'm familiar with it, absolutely. I just never got around to it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It is very much like a tropey sort of by the numbers, like teen horror thriller slasher. You know, a bunch of teens end up at a cabin in the woods. They're all, you know, drinking and gossiping, and then they start getting picked off one by one, and horror arises. Player engagement comes down to largely basic inputs, not like it's not typically really like an intense player input type game. It's more like, do you want this character to go the left road or the right road? I actually think that the trickiest mechanical part of Until Dawn is that there are several segments where you're not supposed to move your controller and it uses motion sense. And if you even just like normal human, like adjust your limbs while holding the controller, it will fail you and you'll get murdered. So I found myself when I was playing the game, I would literally put my controller down for those sequences so that I wouldn't have to worry about it. It's just a really great little story, though. Really enjoyed it mechanically, even though, like I said, I ended up putting my controller down because I really got upset from failing things. And in fact, they ended up making a whole series of games in this basic gameplay style. Until Dawn, of course, was published by Sony Interactive, but Supermassive, who makes these games, ended up working with Namco Bandai to publish the Dark Pictures anthology. There are four main games so far in the Dark Pictures anthology. There is also a sub VR game. Those four were 2019's Man of Medan, 2020's Little Hope, 2021's House of Ashes, and 2022's The Devil in Me. The idea, of course, was for this to be like an ongoing motion picture type series. They're not like serialized. They're not an ongoing narrative, although there is some thematic connections, and they've sort of teased the idea that there could be some broader connections. Supposedly, the next game in the series, Directive 8020, is going to be releasing in 2026. I'm sitting here doing prayer emoji, basically, really hoping that this comes out. I'm a big fan of the way that they approach narratives, of the way that they sort of do the interactive movie approach in games. I think that if you enjoy Until Dawn, any of these other anthology games are worth checking out. And the VR sub game, they did one for Until Dawn as well. It was called, that one was a Festival of Blood or something. And basically, you're like on a roller coaster using your VR controller as like a light gun, and so you're like shooting targets as you're riding a roller coaster, basically. It is a lot of fun. It's sort of like a shooting gallery in the style of the Disneyland shooting galleries. Oh. Like the Toy Story, yeah. Like, but just sort of cranked up in intensity, basically.
Yeah,
but it's not unpleasant. And I also have to note that Supermassive also released a game called The Quarry. This was not a part of the Dark Pictures anthology, but does harken back a little more to Until Dawn in terms of the pacing. The Dark Pictures anthology, as noted, is really meant to be more like, these are meant to be more like little 2-hour motion picture type presentations, whereas Until Dawn is a little longer, The Quarry, you know, a little longer. But again, if you're looking for interactive horror movies, I don't think you can go wrong with any of these games. I'd also like to mention Resident Evil 7 and 8. You know, I had mentioned those previously, but I am a big fan of the current direction of the Resident Evil series. I think they have brought a lot of the horror and tension back in this new gameplay style. Things are very, very much more like first person exploration. The horror is in your face, a little harder to escape. Specifically during Resident Evil 7 Biohazard, some of the stuff where you're just investigating the mansion and getting stalked by one of the family members, I would sometimes turn around and see her behind me in a room and actually scream. Just because I was so unaware and so unexpected, and I was so immersed in the setting that it really repeatedly caught me unexpectedly and really, really scared the daylights out of me in the sort of way that I come to this material to be scared of. So I really am a big fan of those two games. Resident Evil 8 in particular has some really amazing character designs. I know we all talk about Large Lady, but she is not the only cool character in that game. I don't want to say too much, though, because I think some of the things that make both of those games function are being a little surprised by the things that are happening in them. Slaggy, have you played any of these sort of modern iteration Resident Evils?
I have not. I've been a little timid too, because I hear they're super scary, and I'm not a big fan of the scares, which is always funny to talk about horror games, but like I do feel like in the time that we've since we recorded our last episode, I have an appreciation for, you know, the wide variety of the horror genre.
Indeed, yeah. I guess I will shout out to Silent Hill F as a game I want to recommend in the sense that I've heard very good things about it. I can't, like I said, I can't personally vouch for it because I haven't played it yet. I've heard very good things about it. By all accounts, it is my understanding it's a good game. I just, again, I can't really vouch for it and I don't want to talk about it too much beyond that. So then the last couple of games I would like to point you in the direction of, the first is The Evil Within 2. Evil Within 2 is, I think, a really tight sequel. The first Evil Within was a little bit more of like a proof of concept for me. And then the second game is where I'm like, oh, I'm actually interested in this narrative. I actually think it's doing some like creepy, wild things that I'm interested in. And I'm really curious to see where this goes. Of the narrative thrillers, this and the next two games, I think, are the ones that are kind of a little more demanding as games, right? Like, I could imagine getting through Until Dawn, getting through Dark Pictures, even getting through Resident Evil 7 as like a non-action focused gamer. But it's a little more difficult for me to imagine someone doing well in Evil Within 2 or Alan Wake 2 or Control, all of which I think are a little bit more action focused, performance focused. Maybe Alan Wake 2 a little less, or maybe Alan Wake 2 has more room for fail states than I realize. That could be the case. Either way, for me, ultimately, these three games, I'm going to pair them together. I want to specifically call out Alan Wake 2 because we had spent a large portion of the original episode we recorded on horror games glazing the original Alan Wake. We would be remiss not to focus on this masterpiece before we were done with this discussion. The world that the first Alan Wake and the second Alan Wake game create in concert is fascinating and constantly had me on the edge of my seat and thinking quite intently about what things I saw meant. Control, of course, also exists within this game universe. So the three, Alan Wake, Alan Wake 2, and Control, are connected narratively in some ways. It's just a really fascinating setting. It is a gameplay style that works for me. And Alan Wake 2 in particular, touches on a lot of the like Stephen King and Twin Peaksy vibes that I was shouting out to even, you know, 12 years ago. I personally, for horror stories, I'm always a big fan of when a regular person is suddenly thrust into horrific circumstances and has to like manage their own reaction to the horror, you know? And in fact, in that regard, Evil Within 2 also does come back into the conversation a little. Even old classic games like Eternal Darkness. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, like even since Eternal Darkness, like I've always found gaming protagonist and players as a result having to grapple with like their own sanity, so to speak, their own resistance to the creeping darkness, to be really fertile narrative territory.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the Silent Hill franchise kind of kicked that off, arguably, and then a lot of these other sorts of series seem to have run with that idea. So
absolutely. I could largely talk about all of these games endlessly, but the thing is, most of them function narratively on you knowing less about them. So again, I think we've sort of set it up so that if you are interested in horror games with friends, you can check out some horror games. If you're interested in sort of seeing where the classics came from, maybe playing some older stories, you could check out some of these older remakes, or play some of these narrative thrillers that are a little less input heavy. Or if you're looking for an edge of your seat, action packed good time, you can check out something like a modern Resident Evil, maybe the more modern Silent Hill, or, you know, Evil Within, Alan Wake, Control, those types of games. Slaggy, do you have any other thoughts here before we move to our ending discussion?
No, just that it seems like one way or another, I'm going to find you, I'm going to get you. but in what I was going to say is one way or another, that the horror genre, largely speaking, has persisted, even if there was, you know, maybe a little bit of dead space with lowercase letters in some of these more pillar franchises, at least like the Silent Hills. I mean, I know Resident Evil kind of still kept going, but, you know, even with some of those big names maybe being less in the forefront, that horror games largely have continued to haunt the gaming community.
Ooh. Excellent. Well, this is my conclusion, but to wrap this conversation out, you've already answered this a little bit, but I'd like to more fully featured ask you, what horror games are you anticipating, if any? And are there any horror games that you'd like to see made that aren't being served presently? For me, I would like to note, I would really enjoy like a Nightmare on Elm Street interactive movie style game or a Scream focused social deduction style game. I think that those could both be really fun spaces for, I mean, honestly, either one of them would work in either way, right? An interactive movie where you're trying to figure out who the killer is or keep all your little friends alive, or an asymmetrical game where you're trying to figure out who the killer is before they kill you. You could do pretty well either way.
I would really like to see a Happy Death Day game.
That's so good.
Like, I'm not a super, 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 super horror film person. I don't mind, some of the slashers.
I dabble.
I mean, I obviously enjoy the Nightmare franchise quite a bit. But Happy Death Day, like, I think the idea of just that kind of reliving the day and, like, trying to... I could almost see it being... almost kind of roguelike in a way. Like, do you follow just with the premise of Happy Death Day? Like,
yeah, actually, that would be crazy enough. I actually think a Happy Death Day roguelike makes a horror roguelike makes a lot of sense.
I would be delighted.
It's kind of a great game design because you have the expectation of getting stalked and killed. So like you're trying to resist it, but when it happens, you won't be too upset because yeah, that's the game design.
Yeah. And then you're trying to each run, like figure out how to, you know, survive and like, oh, this time I did this. And, this time I discovered that the killer was here. Like there's gotta be some sort of horror roguelike like that already. Right. Like if not, adding it to the Game Boy Studios list, as if we have the resources to do that, but yeah, that would be a really fun one. In terms of what actually is coming, I enjoy that original Halloween movie, and it seems like the upcoming Halloween game is directly kind of going to be adapting that, really. So I think that
it's even gonna have a single player component of some kind.
I also just think it would be cool to I feel like especially with these games that are, you know, more like slasher film inspired are going that Dead by Daylight, that asymmetric style. Like, I feel like it would be cool to see more like games where you are, more like a single player game, but like a final girl sort of thing where like you're the final girl. And like, obviously, if you die before then, it's a game over. But, you know, like, I feel like that side of things, like a narrative game, like based on like a final girl, like it doesn't even have to be an existing IP. Like, I feel like that would be a lot of fun. And again, like, you know, less about like trying to kill and stop monsters and stuff and more about surviving and, you know, trying to escape and use the environment around you. Like, I think that there's so much potential in an idea like that.
Absolutely. I love that.
Game Baby Studios. Anyone want to help us be able to survive just doing Game Buoy and Game Buoy Studios? Join the Game Buoy Patreon. No, just kidding. I don't see any opportunity that we would ever be asking you for money.
Yeah, it's difficult to imagine that where we stand today. All right. All this having been done, all this having been said, we have gotten long in the tooth. It's what we do. So I think it's time we start winding down by talking about what's up.
You know who else get long in the teeth?
Who dat?
Vampires.
Ah!
Thank you.
I said, hey, what's going on?
All right, so I started off my gameplay week with Super Robot Wars Y.
Still?
right? So I'm at the 100-hour mark. I looked up online. I'm in Act 6, about halfway through. There apparently is also an Act 7. So I still have like 10-ish hours. So I actually ended up hitting the the pause button on this game. I'm just going to wait for the DLC before I finish it, at least the first DLC pack, just because I really needed a break. I was having a really good time. Like, it is definitely still the best narrative in the series, as noted. It's in many ways the best game in the series, but there's just so much content that I was really feeling the need to move on, both so that I could see other things and also so I would stop feeling like it was just droning. Like, I needed a change of pace. So some of those pacing concerns I had previously voiced are definitely on major display. Although, as noted, the story is still fucking kicking, so I can't be too mad.
You're getting your money's worth with that one.
Well, yeah, there is that vibe for sure, right? Because it's a lot of content, and it's not bad content. It's just, you know, I'm champing at the bit to have gamer ADD and play 50 different games per week practically, so focusing on one super hard can be a challenge after a point, like 100 hours. But what about you? What have you been playing?
Yeah, so most of my What's Up discussion will be crosstalk for one of your upcoming ones, so I'm going to start with Final Fantasy 14. I haven't been logging in with the frequency that I usually do, just because of, you know, another game that came out that kind of dominated my time. I did notably check out the seasonal event, the All Saints Wake, which is their kind of Halloween-themed event. Like, these quests are always, like, you can get it done in, like, 10 minutes, honestly, the quest part of it. But they're always really cute. And there is a Pumpkin Butler mount that's hella cute. I'm all about it. I definitely recommend, if you have a subscription or have been thinking about going back and you want a Pumpkin Butler mount, better get it before, I say get it before it's gone. You can buy it next year on the cash shop, but if you don't want to pay for it and get it for free, go check it out. I am starting to feel like, if we look at the, you know, usual patch release cadence, that we're coming up on, you know, just a couple of months probably until...
Yeah, it'll be December 16. Unless something changes, yeah, it will be December 16.
Yeah, so I'm like, ooh, I better, in particular, like, wrap up my PvP series and get those rewards. Like, I have not yet even checked out the Deep Dungeon, though, so there's still a lot of content. I have not done the Monster Hunters. And I say I still haven't, but I mean, that really has only been out for a couple of weeks now, so, you know... it's not like it's months behind that I'm trying to catch up on content. So I am looking forward to, you know, getting around to some of that soon. But for now, I'm going to toss it over to you because I will have things to say about this game too.
Yeah, the other big game I played this week was Pokemon Legends Z-8. I started it the Thursday night it came out, or I'm sorry, I actually started the Wednesday night it came out, because in our region it was like Wednesday at 9 p.m.
Yep.
So I downloaded it from the eShop using the Nintendo voucher system to save a little money so I could get the upgrade without having to worry about the price. Overall, I had a really good time. I am now going to criticize the game a little bit. And that's why I want to be clear. I did enjoy it. It's just, you know, I have a little bit of a nuanced opinion. Basically, I ended up starting it that Wednesday night. I finished it the following Monday night. So I did this entire game in like 5 days. I sort of fell into a pattern of doing each game, each like major story quest in sync to the game's day night cycle. So every time the new night cycle would activate, I would just happen to be lined up with like, oh, it's time for me to get my new fighter's card so I can do the next in-game tournament battle. As a direct result of this, I ended up speeding through the game and doing the majority of the game just across like 6 or 7 day night cycles.
Wow.
Which was a lot of fun, because I was underleveled at a couple of parts and it ended up being a little more challenging than I think it would have been if I hadn't played this way. And overall, I honestly thought it was a really great experience. Just, you know, with a few downsides, particularly in direct comparison to previous Pokemon games within the Switch generation. I really enjoyed the story, both on its own and as a follow-up to X and Y, quite a bit. But even within that, I kind of felt it was really rushed. Basically, every single story beat within the game, I kind of felt could have used more room to breathe. I was really disappointed because one of the major highlights of Legends Arceus was that there were all of these different crazy traversal abilities you would get that I ended up really enjoying exploring the world with. Whereas Legends Zeta A only really has one traversal ability, and it's not really as impactful as most of those traversal abilities from Legends Arceus were. I understand that to be a sort of knock-on effect of the focus of being on a single city, giving you the ability to like freely glide and climb and go anywhere you want, would kind of broken the platforming focus of this game. The platforming focus in this game was fun, and it was designed in such a way that the limited mobility was required for this platforming to work. But it's effectively MMO platforming and like 2D game design platforming, where it's like, get to this higher roof and fall onto this item. And if you see an item you can't get, you basically have to look for, oh, what can I fall off of to land there? It's okay. It's fun for what it is, but in direct comparison to some of the world design that we saw in Legends Arceus, for example, it ended up feeling kind of bad over the course of the game. And then that sort of makes me think overall, you know, right? I was mentioning, I kind of worry that the focus on a single city might have been a little bit of a poor choice. I did really enjoy the increased focus on minute exploration vis-a-vis the Roto Glide. And I went through phases of really enjoying the tight gameplay focus, but then also would come back to sort of like lamenting having a whole region to explore and experience, as in Legends Arceus and Scarlet Violet. To sort of sum it up, it's like they had a handful of really cool core game ideas and they executed on them fantastically, particularly with regard to like the new combat system, which is now real-time combat and stuff. Unfortunately for me, I think there's just not enough of like the other game stuff, that the other meat, not just the potatoes, right? Or maybe I have that reverse. They have the meat, but they don't have enough of the potatoes, right? I still overall really enjoyed it. A lot of the discussions about the game are framing it as not being worth the money, not being worth playing, that, you know, we're all giving the game a pass because it's not good and we don't like it. And for me, it's like, well, hold on. I really liked it. I thought Legends Arceus was better. I thought Scarlet Violet, of which I am on record as having been a fan of even before it was fixed, I thought it was a better game. But I still thought Zeta A was great. I've, you know, still been putting on time in the post game. I won't talk about it on air. I'm finding the post game to be a little thin, but I'm still doing it. So like, I'm enjoying the game. I'm glad I played it. I don't feel like I got ripped off, but also I do have notes. I don't think that's a bad thing. What about you, Slaggy? What are your notes?
Yeah, I mean, what I'll say first is that I think that, you know, things that we enjoy, it's still, there's nothing wrong with critiquing them, right? So
I dare say it's one of the fundamental tenets of our program that it's important to critique the things we love.
Yeah, so I am still not yet at postgame. I am feeling like I'm getting pretty close to the sort of climax of the game. The interesting thing compared to the way you played it is that I've been doing a lot of side quests in between each of the kind of story missions. So I've been really enjoying, like, some of them are literally just like have a battle, but like it's been kind of cute to kind of go in and like explore those side quests. There's, you know, some side quests will like straight up give you a Pokemon. So like that's been a lot of fun. Like, I think for me, the big takeaway here is that I really enjoy the combat. Like, I don't see the mainline series ever fully going into, sorry, I said S-I-R-I and my smart device just thought I was talking to her. So anyways, I feel like the mainline Pokemon games, like, you know, are always going to be turn-based. I can't see them completely abandoning that. But like, I really enjoy the idea of like an action RPG Pokemon. Like, you know, I feel like Legends Arceus was like getting to that point, but it was still, you know, largely turn-based. Like, I really enjoy that, like, kind of real-time Pokemon combat. Like, it's worked really well. I think that's probably the highlight of the game for me. I think that, like, to your point, I do feel like the game world really should have been bigger to kind of give that sense of scale. Like, I completely understand, you know, it's the point of the story is to take place in Lumiose City, but like, it's not going to be, if it's not going to be like, you know, Legends Arceus, where it was almost more like Pokemonster Hunter, Pocket Monster Hunter, right? I feel like that Lumiose should have been more like, I mean, maybe not quite this big, but more of the scale of something like Night City from Cyberpunk 2077, or even, you know, like the Grand Theft Auto games, like having like, here's the downtown, here's the industrial district, which, I mean, there are little bits of that, but like, I feel like even just being able to have that sense of scale, like, would have really made the game more expansive, but it also understandably would have made the game more expensive. And, you know, with those tight budgets, you know.
Well, and that's why discussing the Pokemon Terra leak is so important, because I think talking about the size and scope of Pokemon Legends Zeta A, it's important to note that these are like major, huge games that actually could be scaled up. It's not an unreasonable request, in my opinion.
Yeah. You know, one way that I felt maybe, that really
maybe impacted. Maybe only unreasonable with regard to their schedules and planned timelines. I'm sorry, please continue. Right.
I was just saying, I think really where I felt that was less with the exploration. And I mean, I definitely feel like, you know, being able to glide around in Legends Arceus, and then you have a rotophone that can keep you from falling to your death. Great. Like, the wild areas for me is really where it felt way too small. Like, you know, there's a fair number in the city, but like, they're just like, you know, it's like, it's a little city park. Like, I contrast that with something like the region of Paldea in Scarlet Violet. Like, you know, I mentioned on the Switch 2 launch one that, and I have not had a chance to pick it back up since then, but I put in about 6 to 7 hours just wandering in around that starting region, like Breath of the Wilding, and catching Pokemon, and, you know, like, not even starting the story. Like, in my, I think it's Scarlet is what I was, yeah, it was Scarlet that I started playing through on Switch 2, like, literally just during that Switch 2 launch. Like, I have not even started the story, and because there's so much to explore in that one region, and, like, I feel like, in comparison, it's, oh, well, that's Lumiose, you could walk around it and about, you know, 20 minutes, maybe.
Well, I think you nailed it perfectly. I love the Lumiosity of Lumiose City.
Yes.
But effectively, the core gameplay in this game takes place in what are effectively small city parks. All of the Pokemon catching and the majority of the Pokemon battling, although not all, are confined to what are effectively just small little, like, dog parks in the city, effectively.
Oh, a park.
And it's not that it isn't cute, but it's that for that to be the entirety of the game is, it just feels like there should have maybe been a little more to it.
Yeah, I think all that having been done, all that having been said, I did enjoy that kind of gameplay cycle. You know, having questing during the day and then at night doing, you know, you don't have to do the battle zones at night, but like that idea of that you can do the battle zones during the night, trying to maximize, like, I am so rich in this game because, like, just getting those, how many people you can battle in the night to try to maximize your profits is actually kind of fun.
I enjoy the
boss battles with the bosses. I won't spoil that. I think there's a lot of great stuff on offer. I think that between Legends Arceus and Legends Zeta A, they've explored some really cool ideas. I would like to see kind of both of those things marry together in the future, specifically with this Galar game that is rumored, but also, you know, I would really, really love to see Project Seed, you know, if it really is what we all think it's going to be, like, really, truly tie all of these ideas together. So, I got a little long in the tooth. I guess you could call me a Whelmer? No, not Whelmer. What's the walrus Pokemon? Oh, Seal. No, not Seal. Seal? Walrein.
I was just going to say Walrein.
Yeah.
All right.
Getting long in the tooth here.
I tried to play a little bit of Blue Protocol, but I'm honestly struggling to log in. It's pretty cute, but the structure of the game as it was brought over and revived is a phone game. It is what it is.
Yep.
And the structure is, honestly, it's a little boring for me. I'm sure many people feel that way about MMOs. I'm not doing a value judgment. I still like the moment-to-moment gameplay slash combat, so I will continue to check in. It's just really been a struggle to keep it as like a high priority for me.
Yeah, I fell off of that pretty hard, but I would love to see like that. And I'll talk about a game that has some pretty fun traversal. Like, that's a fun one to just jump around and jump to the rooftops. Like, I would almost love to see that team develop not a phone MMO and explore some of those ideas, because...
Yeah, I'd like to see the original version of Blue Protocol. Maybe someday.
Oh.
Anyway, what else did you play?
So I will probably just kind of combine these two, because the first point, and I kind of talked about these a little bit in our discussion, is the Resident Evil 2 remake and the Silent Hill 2 remake. So, you know, as mentioned, I wanted to kind of get context for where Resident Evil is at these days. The modern control scheme, as I kind of alluded to, I think that's, you know, probably a good choice for people who maybe are interested in the Resident Evil realm, or maybe got into it with some of the more modern games, and then, like, going back to it would be like, ooh, you know, that's a... those tank controls not working for me. For me, I'm not even squeamish, but the level of gore is a little bit more than, you know, I want to be doing on a Saturday night. And just kind of that heart-pounding Doki Doki panic. You know, there was nothing like that straight up made me scream or anything. But like, yeah, I mean, I think just kind of for me, it's not the right fit. But for by contrast, I feel like my time with Silent Hill 2 has definitely been a lot more compelling. Like, you know, I talked a little bit about that. I played Shattered Memories on Wii. I really don't remember a lot about it. I don't believe that I finished that game.
Having just listened to you talk about that, because I listened to that episode, your big takeaway was you were really impressed with the feeling of immersion by working the in-game flashlight using the Wii remote.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. What I really think is fantastic about Silent Hill 2, and I'm sure this holds true for many Silent Hills, is just this one in particular, is just the way that they really delivered on that atmospheric dread. Like, I feel like that's the big contrast between like something like a Resident Evil. Something that I think really is significant, and my understanding is that this is kind of a Silent Hill thing generally speaking, is just that the sound design is an important part. Like, between the really unsettling ambient music, like, I was playing this like in the dark, you know, and there were nothing like jumping out scaring me, but just like that music, I was like, ooh. And then like the radio static, actually, as someone who does not like jump scares, like, knowing that the radio static means those projectile vomiting gimp zombies are nearby, like, that's really helpful to be like, okay, like, I've gotta kind of steel myself for one of these monsters. And, you know, for me, the fact that it's less about being like, ooh, scary, boo, and more about like a somber mood being evoked, and just kind of like the feeling that this dilapidated and decaying state of the town of Silent Hill gives you, like, that's a lot more palatable for me than like monsters gonna jump out to you, right?
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. It's actually kind of relates to what I was saying earlier about how I really enjoy a lot of media like that, like, you know, like Twin Peaks, where you sort of have the oppressive forces coming in from outside on an otherwise sort of normal situation.
Yeah, my understanding is that, you know, this is kind of even in like the other Silent Hill games, that this is really kind of what they do. And as a result, I'm honestly inclined to, you know, not only put in more time with Silent Hill 2, but also maybe check out F. Although if it's more about fighting monsters than about...
I'll check out F and I'll let you know.
Yeah, because I've heard good things about it. One of the things that really kind of stood out to me is that, like, I had a general sense of uneasiness while playing, but like, rather than feeling like bad, like, ooh, that's like, you know, feeling uneasy, like, it kind of didn't bother me. It like almost gave me an opportunity to let me face my fears, you know?
Yeah. And I would note that sort of feeling of almost like the opportunity for catharsis is actually what draws most of us to horror media. Right?
Yeah.
We get to face our fears. We get to be scared, but we also get to do it in a relatively safe space where no matter how scared I get during Resident Evil 2 remake, for example, my Captain Spike's body is safe and sound. And so I can really sort of experience the horror without being in danger. And that's what sort of leads into the fun of horror and sort of what leads, I think, to us going out and watching movies in the theater of teens being slaughtered by a man in a mask or whatever, is that sort of the opportunity of catharsis and the opportunity to overcome, right?
Right. I think that my initial experiences with Silent Hill 2 are really the first time that I've internalized that. And, you know, maybe part of that's just therapy.
Oh, you got me, girl.
Grounding myself in reality. But like, no, I'm really impressed. And I can see why Silent Hill 2 is so iconic. And there used to be a hole here. It's gone now.
Ah, perfect. All right. Well, I'll wrap through my last three real quick. For Fortnite, I've been slowing down a little bit while we wait for what's next. I've had such a blast with this chapter. I'm still having a really good time with Fort Nightmares. It's just, you know, stuff that I've talked about previously.
Yeah.
But it's still a good time. I'm like level 230 on the Battle Pass or something. I got like the super deluxe edition of the Megazord for the season. I'm very happy.
Amazing. I have major FOMO because I'm not going to finish my Battle Pass. By the first, I mean, never say never, but
yeah, I mean, you know, there's still like a month left in most of the passes because we have
true.
The presumed Simpsons mini pass coming. So maybe that could be the time.
Yeah, it's just that Megazord and Power Rangers pass. Like, I don't think I'm going to finish. Boo. But anyways, I know you have some other things you've been enjoying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I also started Final Fantasy Tic Tacs and I've started it. I only put a little bit of time into it. It's a game I've played so many times that I'm not like dead set on staying on top of it. I mainly wanted to see like how it was executed. And honestly, I'm really impressed. The actual voice acting that they have done to voice nearly every like spoken line of dialogue is really well done. It does not sound like dollar store voice acting. I recognized several voice actors. Just really impressed by the presentation. I haven't really come to any of like the tweaked fights where the numbers are supposed to be quote unquote fixed, particularly like the Y graph fight and what have you. So I will let you know as I get just a little deeper, probably next week. And then the last but definitely not least game I've been playing, this was a surprise dark horse. I only started playing it a couple of days ago, but I've already put a stupid amount of time into it. This is Ballcross Pit, which we mentioned a little bit during the news roundup because it has a Switch 2 port coming next week. This is, like I noted, basically the Vampire Survivors formula applied to Arkanoid / Breakout. It is super fun to experiment with ball combinations because you basically get special powered balls, and then once they level up, you can combine them in Vampire Survivors formula, you know, akin to. The just one more round vibes with this game are so strong. It's like it puts civilization to shame. Like I'll be literally like, oh, I need to walk the dogs like right now. And then playing Ball Cross Pit for another 30 fucking minutes as the dogs are like, Papa, please.
Oh, no.
Right. Don't worry. We have not had any accidents. I've never been, you know, that bad. But typically I'm able to be right on top of stuff. So this game being this addictive is pretty wild.
Oh, no.
Definitely having a fun time with it and looking forward to playing more.
Excellent. I'm just glad that it hasn't caused you to mix the dog's Call of Duty.
Ah! All right. All of this having been done, all of this having been said, could you lead the way to the exit lewd?
Yes. I'd like to thank the following for reposting our previous episode: Sinister Sulker, Walloping Web Snappers, and Edward Varnell from the Boss Rush the Boss Rush Network. And of course the Nintendo Powerblock podcast as well. As part of the Boss Rush Network. Thank you for reposting our previous episode, which was episode 184, Grand Theft Autumn, Where Is Your Buoy? We got some responses regarding the shout out to Walloping Web Snappers. Walloping Web Snappers said, OMG, thank you, with a black heart emoji, a red heart emoji, and a blue heart emoji.
You are absolutely welcome. Yeah,
and a screenshot that I believe is from one of the Spider-Verse movies.
I think so.
We had Eddie V, as I like to call him, Edward Varnell from Nintendo Powerblock Podcast, Boss Rush Network, saying, yes, I love this podcast. Oh, thank you. And Standard Issue Computing, currently calling themselves Standard Issue Cell Computing, saying, perfect episode title. Thank you. I knew specifically that standard issue computing would appreciate that.
Absolutely.
And we had a social links question of the week saying, hello, folks. This week we're talking about horror games over the last decade or so and some of our favorites to spend time with this Halloween. What are yours? We had Bathory Holmes over on Blue Sky saying The Cabin Factory, Until Dawn, The Quarry, The Dark Pictures, Switchback VR, Resident Evil Biohazard, Resident Evil Village, Resident Evil 4 Remake. And also mentioning that all of the Resident Evil games have a tasty VR mode of pure terror goodness. If only Resident Evil 7 would get upgraded for PSVR 2.
I actually have a couple of responses to this. First off, of their list of games, the one I was not familiar with, because, and obviously we didn't talk about it in this episode, was The Cabin Factory. So I did a little bit of reading on it just before this episode went live, and it looks like it's like a sort of like a game in the style of PT, but it's like a narrative of inspecting cabins to see if they're haunted. Like, it sounds fascinating. So I'm actually planning on checking this out once the sun goes down tonight. My husband and I have been doing horror movies every night, but I think tonight we'll do a horror game.
Lovely.
The other thing I wanted to note. I do not have a PSVR 2. I wish I did, specifically for Village. I imagine Big Mom, not the One Piece Big Mom, but the other Big Mom, the one that's in Village. I have to imagine that's a sight. Very cool.
Yeah, having to physically look up at Big Mommy. Yes. And Dummy Mommy.
That's what I'm saying, though. The sense of scale that I typically get during VR games, when I think about it in that setting, that's a kick. I get a kick out of that.
Absolutely. And speaking of husbands, I misread his current display name. Sulker is going by Sinister Skulker. That's amazing. I can't believe I misread that. Replied with Until Dawn, Phasmophobia, and Phasmophobia, saying, because who doesn't love being scared in a dark ghost hunting situation? And 7 Days to Die. That's one that we didn't bring up. And technically not a horror game, but Digimon Survive feels like a horror game with how many main characters can lose their lives if you make the wrong choices. Ooh, you don't want to be Digi-destined to die.
No, it for real, though. Digimon Survive is so dark. It's like it has a bunch of visual novel styles, but they can go like gory end to your various characters. And if it happens, you just fucking lose them.
Is that the one that is pretty recently released? Yeah, all I've been noticing is that a lot of people are posting about one of the Digimon kind of being sexy.
I don't think it's that recent. It was the one from maybe like a year or two. Oh, okay. But it's the one that a year or two ago when it came out, people were definitely complaining similarly about how dark it was and about how sad some of these fates were.
Well, you know, that's the digital world, I suppose. And speaking of digital worlds, we love your feedback. We love your subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. Are we even still on Facebook? I presume we are until you tell me that you've just completely cut all contact on any meta platforms. Oh my god, talk about jump scares. My Apple HomePod. Yeah, my Apple HomePod. Did it pick her up on a microphone?
Sure did.
Oh boy. Anyways, we are on Blue Sky. We are GameBuoy.org with an actual dot. That's probably probably one of the best places to engage with us. But we are also over on Mastodon at GameBuoy@mstdn.games.
GameBuoy@mstdn.games.
All of our episodes get mirrored to our YouTube channel as well, if that's your preferred way of listening to podcasts, at GameBuoy.org.
On YouTube at GameBuoy.org.
And, you know, there's this thing called email. Everybody's doing the emails, as Britney Spears once infamously said. Our email is GameBuoy.org@gmail.com with the .org spelled D-O-T-O-R-G.
GameBuoy.org@gmail.com with the .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
And technically we have GameBuoy.org with an actual dot, but I don't check that one. I probably should set up some sort of auto-forwarding to the GameBuoy.org with the .org spelled D-O-T-O-R-G.
I'm not going to repeat that, but yes, you should.
And our and our home base, of course, is GameBuoy.org, if you hadn't caught on to that yet.
GameBuoy.org, if you hadn't caught on to that yet.
GameBooey.org if you hadn't caught on to that yet. And please let us know if there's anywhere else that you would like to hear or see GameBooey, because the podcasting landscape has changed a lot in the past few years. I'm still pouring out a 40 for Stitcher Radio. That was a good one. If there's anywhere else that we should go, please let us know. And
I'd like to point you in the direction of some friends of Booey.
If you're friends with Booey, then you're friends with me. If you're down with Booey, then you're down with me.
First, I'd be remiss not to mention Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, our friends and inspirations from whom we take so many of our cues. They are currently taking their victory lap as they plan to wind down in the next month or so. I strongly recommend you check them out every Sunday night when they're live.
Indeed, I will see y'all there at OLR The Final.
Indeed. I'd also like to point you in the direction of Aftermath. In their own words, Aftermath is an independent, worker-owned website about video games, other media, and internet culture. In my words, they're the audience-supported, hint hint, site that many of our faves have landed at. We cite them all the damn time, and we strongly encourage you to check them out, as well as to support them if you like what they do. You should also go check out The Game Mechanics, where they kick the tires and run diagnostics on tabletop experiences. Hosts Logan Jenkins and friend of the show Greg Leatherman have been playing games for decades and have designed several games themselves. Please check them out. And last but certainly not least, I'd like to point you in the direction of Walloping Web Snappers, a Spider-Man podcast. Doug and Derek dive into every Spider-Man cartoon ever made, from the swingin' 60s through the rockin' 90s to Spectacular Ultimate and beyond. Slaggy, who would you like to point us in the direction of?
I'd like to shout out to the Bobby Blackwolf Show over on the VoiceX Network, VOG Network, a weekly internet radio show and podcast discussing the latest news in gaming, as well as sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history. I'd also like to shout out to the Video Game Realness Podcast for a dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, the Nintendo Pal Block Podcast, a dive into the week that was in the world of Nintendo with our good friend Eddie V, Standard Issue Computing on Blue Sky for retro and modern computer games, hardware, software, and history, and sometimes, like right now, a focus on the PS2, PS3 era. Sasha's Retro Bytes on Blue Sky is where you can get bytes of vintage gaming, including magazine scans and photographs. Obviously, bytes spelled B-Y-T-E-S. I'd like to shout out to Defunct Games, which is your daily source for modern video game reviews, exciting trivia competitions, and old school magazine analysis. And last but certainly not least, if you enjoy YouTubes and would like to support a great queer YouTuber, please go check out Thomas Game Docs on YouTube, where each of her videos covers a different aspect of video game history, including game development and sound design for beloved Nintendo franchises, and sometimes just, why is Link so hot? And speaking of Link, our wonderful theme music was done by the late great Zelda Reorchestrated, which is the project that reorchestrated beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. Thankfully, the legend continues in the form of ZREO Second Quest, so go check them out and show your support at ZREOSQ.com. And of course, shout out to my hot robot boyfriend Craig, a robotic recording engineer. Without him, GameBooey would not be possible in the modern era, so definitely check out the Craig Discord app for your Discord recording needs.
Discord recording needs. All right.
Did you say disco recording needs?
I sure did not.
Of course. Hold on, though, because I'd be remiss with this being the season of haunting to not also shout out G-Arc, who is Craig's evil twin. Ooh. He does the same thing, though.
Yep, you got that right. All right, in the coming days, we're cooking up a pair of episodes. One is about Pokemon, and the other is about cut/unused content and lost media that have captured our attention and imagination. So please look forward to those. But until then, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
Stay safe.
Stay safe.
Stay strong.
Stay strong.
And, yeah, what I've felt, what I've known. Sick and tired. I stand alone. Could you be there? Because I'm the one who waits for you.
Or are you Unforgiven too?
Thank you.
So when we do the revisitation in another 10 years, it's going to be Unforgiven 3, right?
Naturally. Death Magnetic.
Oh my god, did you hear it go?
Now recording.
Spooky.
Creepy crawlers.
Your audio from YouTube videos to make waves to add to the soundboard because I had it all set up for my Twin Peaks stuff. So maybe I'll do that. Anyway, Twin Peaks is amazing. It's going to come up in this episode. You should watch it. Also, I just realized, I don't know if you remember this, but I had made an edited version of the opening song for our podcast that had lightning crashes added for Halloween.
Yes, I do remember that.
I'm pretty sure I still have that file because I don't delete anything and I carry all of these audio files forward. I'm going to use that for this episode again.
Good. Oh. Hold on, I'm doing a... I had to get the reference right. Charmeleon, War Turtle, Mewtwo, Tentacruel, Aerodactyl.
Ammonite, slow, bro. That's all, folks.
That's all, folks. And I imagine here's where the hot topic is the way that we rhyme would go.
Ah! All that happened.
And you know, yeah. Oh, I was going to say, I've got a transition here.
Do it.
So... when he says super, I think of like Frankie be like, super animal. Oh. It'd be funny if I'm like, I just completely lost my train of thought. Thanks a lot.
Even old classic games like, of all of the times for me to forget the name of that stupid GameCube horror game I was talking about, Eternal Darkness.
Released in Japan by Docomo, who we talked about last time. It's
to the Docomo.
Let's not start that again, but,
So you may recall a few weeks back we were discussing the many purchasing options. I'm sorry, I'm trying to think of a way to say this. I was going to say retail configurations, but I guess that's not really appropriate terminology for a download title. Except we now have a retail purchase option for Killer Instinct. This is, of course, the Xbox One launch title fighting game revival of the classic Rare fighting game series.
It's so funny to hear the words Rare and classic in the same sentence.
Okay, let's be real. Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah, I just mean...
GoldenEye.
I just mean these
Jet Force Gemini.
I just mean that I haven't heard
Banjo-Tooie.
The two words combined. Oh, just go on
Blast
with it.
Core.
Just go on with it.
So...
King Dewey Jr.
And welcome back, boys and ghouls. And, you know, maybe that's a difference between Eastern and Western storytelling philosophy and sensibility, because this is more of what you would see, again, like in a Twin Peaks or Twilight Zone or a Stephen King novel of an ordinary person being flung into this extraordinarily terrifying situation. Of Shadowgate.
Every time you see Uninvited, I'm like, you're uninvited. And I hear like the little piano riff. Whoa. Wow. You went for it.
Sorry. I am so sorry that that just happened. Deja Vu 2 is a little redundant, eh?
Absolutely.